So we have 8 members here, and since we have Bridget and Anjali who are not here, that means Carl can vote. So procedurally, we're set, and with 8 people, we need 5 to pass a motion. So we're set in that regard. I just want to make a quick announcement in case there's anyone here to discuss either the Dunning-Jackson-LaFollette project in G1 on the 2020 project list. That's been postponed because they need a little bit more information. And G4, the University Avenue project update, City Engineering had asked us to put it on the agenda for this meeting, but then asked us to take it off the agenda and move it to January 8th because they asked for some plan revisions. So we're going to need to push that one off. So anybody who might be here from the public to talk about either of those, we're not going to have, we don't have anything in front of us to talk about this evening. With regard to meetings and parliamentary procedures, in the interest of running efficient meetings, we've talked about this a lot in the past, had a lot of requests from members to try and keep the meetings as efficient as possible. That's our goal to do that. So it's just a reminder to any of the presenters that you can assume that all of the commissioners have read the reports that you've distributed, so there's no need to go back over those reports. Want to make sure that we stay on track with regard to that. Okay, everybody have an opportunity to look at the minutes.
We'll make a motion for approval.
So motion, is there a second?
Second.
There's a motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay. Any public comment on topics that are not on the agenda this evening? Okay. I don't see anybody coming forward, and we don't have any registrations. Any disclosures and recusals this evening? We had one last time, so we do have them on occasion. No? Okay. So on to new business. Mick, are you going to do the resolution?
Hello, everybody. I'm Mick from Metro. I'm in the marketing department. And this first one in front of you is basically something that happens every year. Dane County gives us funding to help us get information out. Basically, it's help with our call center, bus flyers, information on the side of the bus. Basically, anything marketing related that helps us get word out to the public. So it's something we do every year, and we appreciate the assistance.
Any questions?
Recommendation for approval?
Second.
Okay, so there's a motion for approval and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, motion carried. And the second
one? Sure, the second one is we're updating the signage on both our maintenance facility and our office facility. There's a big giant monument sign that's in front of 1245 East Washington, and it used to have the signage for the UW incubator office space that was there. Since they left, it's been vacant, and the landlord has let us put our branding on it. So, but they want us to have an agreement that we're not the largest tenant. So if somewhere down the line, if ShopBop left, which doesn't seem likely, in a business bigger than us came along, they might offer that space to them. So that's why they wanted to do this rental agreement. There's no charge to it. It's just to acknowledge that somewhere along the line, if a bigger business comes through, they might want to give that space to the tenant.
Move approval. Second.
There's a motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Any abstentions? the City Engineering 2020 projects. This is our second installment, I think.
Yeah. Good evening, everyone. I'm Jim Wolf from City Engineering. I'll kind of start with some of the projects as are listed on the agenda here. With the Bikeways 2020, currently we are planning to do some work with centerline markings, wayfinding signage. In terms of construction projects, we are proposing to resurface portions of the Southwest Bike Path. So the portion from Prospect towards like Regent Street and Monroe Street was resurfaced in 2017. So the next segment that we're looking at is from, actually, this is an updated map, from Odana up through Prospect. Engineering has a goal for all of our arterial bike paths to be at a pavement rating of 5 or better. So we're looking at this segment, which is currently at a 5 rating or worse, and resurfacing that in 2020. A couple of different colors here. So with the funding available, our initial goal was to resurface the portion from Glenway to Prospect. That's in the worst condition. But we do have a project scheduled in 2020 for reconstruction of Gregory Street as well. So recognizing that that's going to be a pretty significant undertaking, and it's going to probably take most of the construction season, and also realizing that that would probably be the primary detour route for the bike path. If we can't get these projects to be coordinated schedule-wise, we'll look at resurfacing the portion between Glenway and Odana in 2020, along with the portion between Commonwealth and Prospect in 2020. And then the portion in red, we'd look to do that in 2021. Also, with this portion in red, we are going to consider widening wherever possible. There are areas there where the grades won't allow for that. There's some pretty steep drop-offs from the bike path, but that's going to be in consideration as well. So I think...
Could you just give me an example of the difference between a 5 and a 3? Let's not be subtle with a 4. Just tell me what a 3 looks like, what a 5 looks like.
So you can almost think of it in terms of percentages. It's a 5 out of 10. So if you think of a 5, it's like 50% of the pavement's in decent condition,
okay.
Whereas a 3 would be 30%. So okay. By the time you get to a 3, it's really cracked, a lot of alligator cracking and some rutting. It's going to be in pretty poor condition. And a 5, also not great. It's probably been crack sealed a little bit over the years. There's probably going to be some bumps and things where cracks have settled in with moisture penetration and things. But
thanks.
Jim, there's a technique that's been come along in the last few years with asphalt pavement. It's called safety edge. Do you use that on the... it flattens the side slope of the end shoe.
Oh, I'm actually not familiar with that, but we can certainly explore it.
You need to specify safety edge, and it's a device that paving companies can use on their pavers.
So you don't have the big bump. But
so you don't have it doesn't drop vertically out of the end of the side shoe.
It's
actually a device that flattens that. Makes
okay.
Like
so
45 degrees versus
okay.
45 degrees. I think it might be worthwhile if you take a look at that if you haven't. It sure. Really has no significant cost increase. The device that
that's on the edge of the paver?
On the edge of the paver, yep.
As sure.
The asphalt comes out. It gives some compaction then to the side slope.
Oh, sure.
And what it does is it makes it, if somebody runs their wheel off, there's not a big drop.
Sure.
It's easier to come back on.
You can correct without.
Right.
It sounds.
It really works well for.
It sounds safer.
That's what they call safety.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great recommendation. Thank you.
Yeah.
Is this the only section of pathways within the path network in Madison that are out of 5 or worse, or are there other sections also that are similar quality? And how do you determine, I guess, which sections?
There are other sections, especially some of more not the arterial paths. So I think this is certainly the worst section of our arterial path network.
Okay.
So that's been kind of a priority for us coming up, and we're going to be doing this in phases to extend most of the resurfacing, I think, as far as Midvale as well. Yeah, over the next few years. Yep.
Okay. But you're talking about just the southwest path?
Yes. Yeah. I think the rest of our arterial paths, there's a portion of the Cap City Trail along, like, John Nolan Drive. That's also on our radar, but we do have a future project scheduled on John Nolan that any improvements to the path would be done as part of that project.
Okay.
Charles? Two questions. When was the pavement quality assessed? I'm asking because I think I remember from last weekend biking there, and after seeing this was on the agenda, being like, oh, the section between Midvale and the Beltline actually was rougher than I remembered it, so it might be just worth looking, like, you know, have stuff maybe deteriorated more than you would know based on the pavement assessment. And then the other question, the section that was resurfaced in 2017, was that widened as well?
So that's the easy one. Yes, that was widened.
Okay, that's what I thought.
And in general, with our pavement ratings, we do try to rate them every other year. So we'll do portions of the city 1 year, and then the next year we'll do the other part of the city. That's both for the bike paths as well as the streets. So I didn't check on the exact rating here in this particular instance, but it would have been in the last couple of years.
Other questions? Okay.
Thanks. On to the next one. So we'll delay La Follette Dunning, our project engineers out of the country. And we'll take a look at Brook Street. So we are planning to resurface a couple of blocks of South Brook Street in 2020. So these would be the blocks between Regent and Chandler. I think the pavement here is rated a 3 out of 10. So with this project that we are proposing to resurface and not make any changes to the curb lines. Our traffic engineering department did take a look at these two blocks to see if it would be possible with the existing street width to mark a bike lane. So our face of curb, the face of curb width on these blocks is 30 feet. So what that would look like is shown up on the screen. So that 5-foot bike lane is from the edge of travel line to face of curb. So if I bring up a cross section, that may be a little bit more helpful. So what this would look like is essentially 3 feet of pavement for the bike lane adjacent to a 10-foot travel lane. These are pretty substandard widths. So at this point in time, with the street remaining in its current width, we are proposing to resurface the street and leave it in the current condition with just a marked center line.
Is Mill Street curb-to-curb different than Brooks, or are they the same?
I think it's different. I think Mill Street is a little bit wider. I think it's maybe 36 feet face-to-face. I'm speculating, though. That's just kind of knowing, taking a look.
So I guess not exactly this project, but one of the goals was to find a better bike route through this area, and I think Mills is the sort of marked bike route right now. So maybe just feedback for traffic engineering to think about what else could be done to perhaps improve bike travel on Mills Street, particularly if Brooks is not a good alternative.
So just to be clear, what that means is you'll have a center line and no other line between the center line and the curb.
Yep, that's correct, except for right up at Regent Street. I think we do have a little bit of additional space marked out for some turning space at Regent.
Other comments or questions on this one? Okay.
All right. I think we're on to the next item. Do you want to call it, or should I keep moving?
No, go ahead.
All right, so I think I'll move on to item G2, Blair Street.
Oh, I'm sorry. So any other questions? Just make sure we're done on G1. I'm sorry. I have a sinus infection, so my mind is like not at 100% tonight. So I apologize.
That's all right.
Okay, any other questions on G1? Yes.
Just a comment. I know because we're not getting into the Dunning-Jackson follow-up, but just for I guess that was probably going to come back next time or next month, but it would be interesting to look at La Follette as a, I don't know if it's on as a, if it's considered a bike route right now in our network or not, but kind of take a look at that because it actually is a real key connector between the east and the north side. So just kind of have that in mind perhaps in front of the presentation that we get next time.
Sure.
Thank you.
Any other comments before we move on? Okay, now we're on to G2. Thanks. Blair Street?
Thanks. So we had attached some slides from a public informational meeting that we had back in November. I'll just bring up the display right now. That so in 2018, there was a corridor study that was completed for Blair Street and John Nolan Drive that made a number of recommendations of improvements to the Blair, John Nolan, Williamson, Wilson intersection. And as part of that corridor study, the city did apply for some state highway safety improvement funds, which we have been granted. Last year, we had done some work on Wilson and Williamson to start implementing some of the recommendations from that corridor study. And then in 2022, we're actually looking at the construction project for the remainder of the intersection, which would also be partnered with another WISDOT project on Highway 151, which would be Blair Street up to East Wash, and then on East Washington Avenue between Blair Street and Blount Street. And the limits are shown on the exhibit. So since the corridor study was adopted, there's been a few changes to that proposed plan. A couple of the changes have been to add some medians on Williamson Street and the northerly leg of the Blair Street intersection. This would be to provide space for railroad gates that this intersection would qualify for a quiet zone following construction. Some other changes, most significantly, is the location for the driveway to Machinery Row. So right now there's a driveway in about the same location, and then there's another driveway that runs right along the building up to Williamson Street. So with the project, we are proposing to close this driveway, but more or less leave this driveway in its current location. This maintains access to the Machinery Row parking lot as well as the Parks parking lot. And part of the reason why I was slid over to this side was that it kept the driveway within the street right-of-way, where here's kind of the property lines, these red lines here. So inside of that is part of the parks property. And the Parks Department is currently undergoing a master plan for Law Park. So we didn't want to construct a permanent improvement going through what's essentially the widest and most useful part of the park. That was part of their request. So we are essentially looking to move the driveway as far to the south as possible to kind of clear some of the confusion from the intersection. We realize that this isn't ideal, and we're looking for methods to maybe try to relocate it, but anything that we would do to move the driveway further south along John Nolan would involve impacts to the park. And since this is essentially a federally funded project, impacts to parklands are viewed a little bit more strictly, that we have to document that there is no other feasible alternative, and that essentially the Parks Department is benefiting and supportive of this, any change that would impact the park life.
So just looking at the split in the purple, that is, I'm assuming that instead of the norm for driving where you're supposed to make a right turn into the closest lane, this would allow you to go across the closest lane so that you could go down Blair Street. Is that the purpose of the gap?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's part of the request from the businesses and property owners here was kind of accessibility to the driveway. That in this location, their access is pretty limited in that they only have an option now from John Nolan Drive to make a right turn in. And then during, oh, another thing that I would like to point out here too, especially during peak hour times, this driveway will back up because it gets difficult to turn out there. So we may try to improve some signage here so it doesn't get blocked, but we also bent the path away from John Nolan Drive to give some space here for a vehicle that's trying to get out of this driveway to be waiting closer to the street without blocking the path. That's been part of the issue here. So
it's still going to require some courage.
Yes, absolutely. And the other reason is the businesses here do have fairly significant truck deliveries that come here, that for a truck exiting this driveway, their only real option would be to exit and head northbound on Blair. They won't be able to make this turn into the near lane.
Entry into that will still come from only John Nolan Drive, right?
Yes, that's correct.
You can't make a big left into that. It's going to be a tight right.
Yep, that is correct. We have taken a look at some turning movements here. The driveway is a little bit wider than standard just because of the tight movements, and we're trying to provide that space. Another thing just to note about this is that we are looking at all of these intersections to make improvements to the pedestrian ramps to make sure that we have ADA-compliant crosswalks throughout the project area.
Are there other questions? Grant?
Thank you. There's a note on the diagram about the East Wilson Street corridor study. Can you speak a little bit to the timing of getting this design finalized and that work?
Sure. So we're at a point in the project now where it's about 30% design. And the things that are kind of guiding the direction forward are our environmental document in the section 106, which is more about impacts to historic properties, which there are a number of them. So we feel as though the plan in its current state is sufficient to move forward with that documentation. And working with the Department of Transportation here at the city, we're hopeful that the East Wilson Street study will be concluded early next year. And then at that time, depending upon the results of that study, we can incorporate that into this plan and then come back with an approval of geometry by around 60% of design.
So just a couple questions would be, or some comments. I really like how you did bend that path alignment towards the towards
Lake.
Lake Monona.
Yep.
And if it is possible to even, you know, move it another several feet, it looks like it might be able to. It might be worth it just because, really, getting that longer kind of driveway apron, and I think people will take advantage of that. They'll kind of pull out there, and the more space we can have there to try and not have them block on the path, I think would be great, and or to get squared up as they're coming into the driveway. Looking at the transition to the to get into the intersection, I guess a little bit to the right, like that.
We're here.
Yeah, so that T there, I'm assuming that little blue rectangle is the sort of walking space. You're trying to separate there the walking and the biking at the crosswalk. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
I would just look at the maybe not making that a right angle for the path, and just taking advantage
okay.
of some of that additional terrace space, because I think you'll find the people will end up riding across it. It'll get, it'll happen.
Yeah, or like
on both sides,
adding wedges or something like that on those corners.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, just kind of smoothing those out, because those are going to be, I think, pretty big movements and. It looks like we ended up with, we're still recommending the kind of table topping of the channelized right there. Is that
yes,
what I'm looking
that's
at?
Correct. Yep.
Is that another good feature? Is was that ever considered for the other channelized right coming from Wilson? That one there, yeah.
I don't think so, but we could take a look at that. It's a significantly lower volume than the other right turn. But we could maybe take a look at that, depending upon the results of the corridor study. And
yeah, I'd put it on the list. And again, yeah, depending on the results, that may or may become more of an important one. The parking on East Wilson on the northbound.
Yep.
So today it's got the existing. I don't know what that thing is, median, I guess.
Okay.
And there's no parking right now, but the bike lane is in the location it will be in. Is that right?
Yes.
So basically taking away the street lane along Essen House there, and then adding a parking lane to the right of the bike lane?
That's how it's currently shown. We have been working with Metro a little bit on future bus stop locations that it's also possible that this could potentially be used for a bus stop zone. Right now the bus stop is up at Franklin. So there's also that possibility too.
That would be, I think that's good to look at. I would be in favor of that, I think, because the current spot where the bus stops is right in the middle of the lane, obviously. So using that to allow the bus stop to get out of the bike lane would be, I think, a great improvement. And then either way, whether it is parking or a bus, just I don't know what the width of that is planned to be, but just making sure that it's sufficient to keep it from going into the bike lane there.
Sure.
And then I think the last comment I had was at the main crossing. So it looks like that'll be getting a signal. Is that right?
That's the current plan. I don't think it's been officially approved, but that's kind of in our proposal right now.
Okay. And then perhaps taking a look at a little bit of a bump out or choker. I don't know what the turning templates show you there, but on the Main Street side, not on Blair, obviously, lanes, but if there are a way to bump those out, it just sort of is less exposure for people that are trying to cross there.
Sure. We did take a pretty close look at the turning movements at this intersection for trying to fit in the ped ramps, too. So I think we're pretty tight, but we can take another look at it. One concern with adding a signal there is there's higher likelihood of a vehicle being queued there, so we have a little bit less space to work with for the right turn.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the primary crossing for Beacon patrons? Because they don't try to cross up at Washington, do they?
I'm not real sure. The East Wash intersection, it must be. Because there isn't a crossing on the easterly leg of the East Wash intersection, so I could see that being a pretty high use crossing. There's an RRFB there right now.
Chris?
So on the there, I'm interested in the movement from the trail heading west and then going through to Wilson, which a lot of folks do.
This one?
Coming out where your pointer is, but then heading up the hill towards Wilson.
Oh, sure. Okay.
So what a lot of folks do now is basically line up both in where the current crossing is, but also to the right, sort of informally, sort of up against the tracks there. So
you're over here,
move your pointer. Yes.
Okay.
Yep. So basically what you've got is a lot of people lining up on both sides of that corner and then moving through there together. Mm-hmm. And when you add the new the gate for the train. You're going to add some new infrastructure there at the median. That's going to pretty much make that not an option anymore. So it's going to force a lot more folks to line up. I'm not sure how. Have you looked at the movements of that, of folks bike making that maneuver, and thought about the capacity to handle those folks with this new configuration?
We have a little bit. We can take a closer look at that. One thing, right now the railroad gate is right about here.
Mm-hmm.
So with the project, we had actually moved that here, because this is now just the through and right, so that gate would cross here. Mm-hmm. So that would actually free up a lot more space up on this median area for,
I think,
for
if that,
to queue up.
If that whole median was opened up as like a waiting area, mm-hmm. so folks could make that movement, that would probably be very useful for folks.
Other comments? Chris? And then Ken?
Chris, in your experience, how many bikes congregate there waiting cross? I mean, is it
In the morning, I think it gets busier earlier than I get there. But it could be, I've definitely seen 6 to 12, I would think, yeah. And it's kind of awkward as it is, so this could be an improvement. I have another question.
Yeah.
This is a question that I think is kind of late in the game for, but just looking at this and recognizing a handful of problems that it's trying to solve, which is the entrance to the Machinery Road driveway, mm-hmm. The left turn problem onto Wilson, and high speeds moving from John Nolan through this intersection. Was there ever any talk of opening up the Hancock connection, which is the next road up?
There
was.
During the corridor study? I actually wasn't as involved in the corridor study, so I can't say for sure, but Grandpa can speak to that.
I feel like, though, the design that was sort of landed on towards the end of it was not to have Hancock go all the way through, but to shift the whole driveway alignment to basically where Hancock would be. That was the last iteration that sort of passed from the Nolan corridor study. And to close off everything on the...
And make a connection across John Nolan?
It wasn't to go all the way across to Nolan, but it would allow for a left turn from Nolan, you know, from...
Mm-hmm.
So it basically would move all of the Machinery Row access to a new driveway mm-hmm. that matches the Hancock alignment, but there was some talk about also having it connect all the way through to Hancock, but that wasn't what was in the So that's a good question, though. So has that been sort of explicitly changed, or is this an interim option? Or
as far as the driveway or the Hancock? I guess we see this as somewhere in between a permanent and interim change. So much of it is dependent on the results of the Parks Master Plan. We did take a look at what that driveway would look like, so it kind of snaked through this parking lot. Came out to John Nolan here. So this plan wouldn't prevent that from going in the future, but we didn't want to restrict so much of what parks could do on their property at this time.
Yeah.
So if that's something that is seen as a major improvement and parks can handle that, then that's a possibility for the future as well.
Carl, did you have something?
Yeah, I mean, I think you kind of answered that already because, yeah, I mean, I also remember from the parks discussion and from the corridor study that there was talk about this other driveway and realigning the path to, like, have multiple crossings in the parking lot there or changing how the parking lot works. So, yeah, I was wondering, like, yeah, I mean, are we going to have one driveway or in the end parks may say, like, okay, let's put another one at the other end, and then we have two conflict points instead of one, or after now having two going down to one, and then we have another one.
Yeah, so this plan leaves some options open, but you know, it's a pretty high visibility park with a narrow space along the lake there, so we didn't want to impact what is their widest part. And I think the status with the plan and potential implementation of that plan is a few years out in the budget too, so we had to make sure that something would function for what's there now. And another thing regarding Hancock, that would involve a essentially new street crossing of the railroad tracks. Now, this recent history, it's been difficult to get any sort of new crossing of the tracks. So I think that may be part of the reason why that was left out of this plan.
Other questions?
Yeah, one last comment. It looks like the kind of on-ramp from eastbound Wilson crossing Nolan and then the on-ramp to get up by Machinery Row. So the green markings through the intersection.
Oh, followed, yep.
Yeah, right there. Looks like that curb will be in a new location. Is that part already been done, or is this part of the proposal? Will that be changing, I guess, from what?
It won't really be changing. It might be shifting slightly just because the curb here is changing with some of the realignment of the right turn.
Okay.
So that was more something that had to be done to close off this driveway and get the curb to match in. But the ramp where it is will probably just get replaced in more or less the same location.
Okay. That, since we are replacing, I would just look at making it a little bit more generous if possible. Obviously, you don't want to
the
invite,
width.
You don't want to invite cars to go up into it, but especially when with snow plowing, it's really easy to get it to get it packed in. So yeah, it's and often coming with some speed if you happen to get a green light coming down that hill. So yeah.
Other comments? I had a question with regard to the sharper turning radius for the right turn lane from John Nolan Drive to Williamson. Did you have conversations with Metro about that? Because I would think that would make it, Drew, would that make it harder to turn for buses?
It doesn't look like it.
Okay. Okay, good. Because we had some conversation at one of our discussions on one of the plans about how difficult it is when you change the turns and make them too sharp. So just wanted to make sure that was good with Metro.
Sure.
It's working yep. with them, yeah.
Yeah, and we'll certainly continue to do so, too.
Okay.
We have had some comments from the Marquette Neighborhood Association about making this turn as tight as possible, but we'll certainly do that in coordination with Metro to make sure we're not messing with their operations.
Are there other comments or questions on Blair Street? Okay, will this come back to us then with regard to road geometry or not?
Yes, it will. That will go forward with the more formal approving geometry resolution once we've kind of factored in the results of the Wilson Street Corridor study.
Which you think will be when, Jim?
I don't want to speak for Tom, per se, but hopefully late winter, early spring next year.
Okay.
So do you have a better sense of that, Yang?
I know we've been talking about kind of resuming that study. So I've been kind of looking, staffing for that. I couldn't give exact date that when that can be done.
So it's not going
to be Tom probably has a better idea on that. Hopefully that can be done soon.
Okay.
But I think there are lots of issues that to be resolved. I think what makes it more complicated is the TRB, the BRT, downtown routing. So Wilson Street now becomes part of that line. So that could change things a lot. So there are many moving parts on that.
Just want to make sure I keep track of it. Watch for it.
Did I have one? Sure. I just noticed on the bike path to the west of the new entrance, I see those are marked for tree loss. Are those the only three trees that are there right now?
No, there's.
I can't remember how deep those go, and it looks like. I guess I just want to know, will there still be some large mature trees there?
With this current layout, there would be. So the trees kind of extend. They almost fill up this whole area back here, too.
Okay.
There's probably 6 or 8 total trees in that area.
Okay.
I guess, you know, one specific thing that I guess to clearly ask is... We did look at another driveway alternative that essentially kind of comes off of this driveway and then tees in, so it would move this driveway 40 feet-ish or so further away from the intersection, but it would involve loss of all these trees. I didn't bring that plan with me just because that is kind of subject to that federal parkland use, that even if we did decide that was a significantly better alternative, there's a chance that it won't get approved anyway because there is another viable alternative that's relatively similar. So I don't know if the commission has any additional input if you think that is a significant enough improvement to move it to that location and lose those trees, or if it's generally okay.
I got the impression you were concerned about losing fewer trees.
Yep. I just wanted to throw that out there. That was part of our considerations where it stands right now.
Harold?
This is probably only slightly related to the trees, but is the path going to be widened there? Because, I mean, that, I guess, is one big thing where, you know, we have people on bikes and people walking and being able to separate them. I mean, that seems like a great opportunity to get some of that widening achieved.
So I think what we're showing within the project limits is kind of a continuation of the separate sidewalk and cycle track. So this would be, I think we have it shown as a 5-foot sidewalk right now and a 10-foot asphalt path. So it's not quite as generous as what's right along Machinery Row, right up against the building, but it's more similar to what was kind of extended down closer to Blom Street.
Other questions or comments?
Okay. Can I ask one more quick question? So I'm guessing with that there's probably the general feeling that moving the driveway over the top of these trees isn't that significant of an improvement to what we're showing here. Is that correct? Thanks.
I see agreement to that. Other comments? Good discussion, and it sounds like we'll see you back again.
Yes.
All right. Great. And.
Thank you.
There aren't any other comments. We'll move on to G3, which is the Cannonball Path Extension Options, which we talked about a little bit at the last meeting. Hi, Renee.
Here you go. I think this is probably sufficient for this discussion. I'll scroll through here. So the Cannonball Path Extension to make a connection between where it currently ends at Fish Hatchery Road up to the Winger Creek Path is something that is perpetually on our radar. We think that would be a great connection to make, a low-stress connection to downtown and to the south side areas here. So currently the path ends at Fish Hatchery Road. There's a short stretch of essentially a widened sidewalk along Bowman Park and Wright Middle School. And then It's a little bit over a half mile or so. The only connection between those is on-street bike lanes on Fish Hatchery Road. This portion of Fish Hatchery has 30,000-plus vehicles a day, and right now the travel lane widths, we have 11-foot travel lanes and a 4-foot bike lane with 2-foot gutter. Not the greatest connection in terms of a low stress. So the planned kind of mapped route currently for the extension of the bike path would run parallel to the railroad corridor and then north through Captain Newspaper's property and Bowman Park and then connect to the Winger Creek path with a new bridge over Winger Creek. So with the current state of the eminent domain law and the fact that this route would require some easement purchases, that kind of makes the schedule of that route indeterminate. So we wanted to hold a public informational meeting a couple of weeks ago that we are exploring another alternative. So what this alternative would entail would be on the easterly side of Fish Hatchery Road, so not the gas station side. It would involve removing the on-street bike lane, moving the curb out closer to the center line of the street, removing the existing 5-foot sidewalk, and replacing it with a 10-foot multi-use path. So this would at least get bikes away from vehicles a little bit to extend that connection up to the Bowman Park path and eventually to the Winger Creek path. So we held this informational meeting to kind of get a sense of which route was preferred by the neighborhood and also if they thought the loss of a separate sidewalk and on-street bike lane to be replaced with a multi-use path would be significant enough of an improvement to try to move forward with knowing the indeterminate schedule of the other portion of the path. The other factor here is that Fish Hatchery Road is a county road, so anything that we would do out here would also have to be supported and okayed by the county, too. So the general, these are just some images from the presentation. So this is kind of a summary of the possible options that was presented that, you know, the alternatives we're looking at, one continues on a path that doesn't have driveway crossings and street crossings, but would be a little bit more secluded, has that indeterminate schedule with the real estate purchases, and is a little bit more costly. We have another one that we could move forward with. It does provide some separation between all the vehicles on Fish Hatchery Road. But it does complicate things with you'll have multiple driveway crossings and street crossings also. So kind of the general summary or so from that involvement plan and emails we've received is that it seems like most people prefer the actual path option, the extension along the railroad tracks to north through Bowman Park. But most people thought that the other alternative along Fish Hatchery Road would be an improvement to the situation for connecting the two paths. So I think our current path forward here, I think, is to try to meet again with the owner of Capital Newspapers and see if there would be support for purchasing the easement to try to move forward with that original alternative, kind of see where things end up there. And if not, that's kind of why we're here, to see how the commission feels about the two alternatives and if you feel as though the alternative along Fish Hatchery Road would be a significant enough improvement over the current condition with the on-street bike lane and separate sidewalk to try to move forward with that option to make this connection in a little bit more timely fashion.
And if I can just say, of the people who, you know, who have contacted us, the majority, as Jim said, were in favor of the original alignment. But we did hear from a number of women who had some concerns about that original alignment and the fact that they did not feel that they would be comfortable riding their at certain times. So there were several women who came and expressed that concern, and so did have additional support for that fish hatchery alignment from that particular group.
So from a lighting standpoint, Renee, or?
Just, it's very isolated back there. There aren't businesses. There aren't a lot of activities, whereas obviously along Fish Hatchery Road, there are people all the time. So that just came up from the women, some of the women who attended.
Okay.
And one thing, just to give a little bit more context to the portion of Fish Hatchery Road that would involve removing the on-street bike lane, I've got it shown on the map, is from about the railroad tracks to the northernmost Capital Newspapers driveway, which is, I think, about 1,200 feet or so.
Grant?
Thank you. A few other, I guess, questions. So one of the reasons I would be in favor of the kind of rail alignment is to potentially continue that alignment at some point, sort of through the Thorstadt property over to Bell Street and to connect with the Wingra path there, because then that all of a sudden would be a really strong connection to downtown from kind of all places south. So is that, I know there are some wetlands in that area, but if we did sort of continue to pursue this rail alignment, would that be an option that's open for us sometime in the future?
It could potentially be. So right now the city does own a swath of land kind of along the tracks. It would just involve additional easement purchases and real estate to work with.
And then in terms of the feedback that we got from the isolated nature, would that, and I've heard that before with other facilities, so it's certainly a real consideration. In terms of people that would be using the rest of the Cannonball path, though, I mean, that's sort of, if you're comfortable using the section to the west of Fish Hatchery, it wouldn't be fundamentally different than in terms of isolation, et cetera, right, than the rest.
No, it definitely is a much more isolated path than some. I mean, it's an industrial area, the first part, until you get to the neighborhood closer. I mean, you have to go a fair ways to Leopold before you're in a neighborhood. So it is definitely one of the concerns about the path generally.
Okay. It's probably with the Arboretum is an impossible question, but have we ever looked at a alignment on the west side of Fish Hatchery kind of paralleling instead of the east side?
We did look at that, and why we're currently proposing it on the east side is on the westerly side there is a BP gas station that is probably the highest volume driveway pretty significantly in this area. So one of the main concerns with this route along Fish Hatchery is the driveway crossings and with the highest volume driveway in that location, so we thought it'd be best to avoid it. And then eventually we'd want to connect to the path on the east side anyway. And there's already an existing crossing set up with an RRFB by the railroad track, so it seemed like a fairly logical connection to make through the east side there.
Yeah, so I guess just my overall feedback is, I mean, both would be great. So keep options open for both, particularly if there is some redevelopment in this section and we could get a little bit more space to work with and reduce some of the number of those driveway crossings because there's just a lot of them through that section. I can imagine it maybe working a little bit better in the future. But I do like the idea of continuing to think about the Cannonball following the rail corridor and making that kind of more direct connection, hopefully, into the Wingra path at some point.
Harold, and then Ken.
Question, and I think I asked that when we talked about the application, the connection to Ridgewood way. I suspect that probably came up during the neighborhood meeting because, yeah, as I said, there's like this desire path along the railroad tracks, and if we put it on the other side of the tracks, then that connection is not being made. And along the lines of what Grant is saying, I mean, if that connection was made, then you could at least continue the Bridgewood Way, move over toward Park Street, and then, yeah, maybe connect with Street eventually or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that that is something that came up and also came up at the South Madison Neighborhood Plan when we did a bike and talk event, that, you know, this alignment along the railroad corridor, you're not on the side that gets you access to that neighborhood there, and then the businesses on Park Street. That would require property that we don't own that's the railroad right-of-way.
I imagine it's a trade-off kind of thing. I'm assuming that if a bike is on the street in a marked lane, drivers see it more readily than if the bike is on a up by the sidewalk or sharing a sidewalk thing. I mean, I'm just trying to figure out what's the trade-off at driveways. You know, so I'm coming down, boom, 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 and I'm thinking about making my right turn or whatever. I think I see the bicyclist, if they're on the street, easier than if I see them going exactly the same speed, but they're 5 feet removed. How does that play into your consideration?
Sure. I think the biggest issue isn't the bikes that are traveling the same direction as the motor vehicles. It's the people on the path who are going the other direction that they're not looking for. So that's a really typical crash type, is someone's on a shared use path or a sidewalk, and they're not they're on the side of the road traveling opposite of the car. So people are not looking for that particular movement.
So we're gaining less apparent stress because we're not right next to the cars, but we're possibly adding a factor that...
Sure, that's why those crossings are really important, to sort of highlight the fact that you should expect that two-way travel, because that is a common crash type, but it does give you that more room for cars aren't going to drift into the lane. You have a little more room to maneuver if something happens to you. So, you know, obviously there are trade-offs.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, that's a good point. So some of the more competent bicyclists actually prefer on-street bike lanes for specifically the same reason. And especially when they're the shared use path on one side of the street, some of them prefer to be on the street in the bike lane on street. So they're next to traffic, they're heading to the same direction as traffic, so they think they are more visible.
Mm-hmm. So basically, there's not a consensus among bike riders.
There are different types of bike riders.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I would say that came up at the meeting. We did specifically ask if there were people there who, if that lane was removed, if they would, what they would choose to do. And there were a couple of people who said they would use the travel lane regardless of the removal of the bike lane.
Thank you.
Chris.
Do you expect it to be hard to work with the county on this, or have you done similar projects before?
I guess the correct answer is potentially, that we have reached out to them, and their initial response wasn't overly supportive. So I think one thing that would be helpful for if we approach them with a more formal project proposal or something like that would be having the support of the commission and the neighborhood feeling that this is a significant improvement. That part of their concern was essentially the discussion that we were just having, that there's going to be some trade-off for the type of bicyclists that would be using this, as well as driveway crossings and potential for riders using the travel lane on Fish Hatchery Road without that marked bike lane in place.
Jessica?
Just so that I'm understanding correctly, is the real estate consideration only that one parcel with the newspaper? Or what parcels are needed?
It is that one owner for the current plan route to extend up through Bowman Park. There's actually two aspects to it. One is they have a railroad spur that is serving their property. The amount of use of that is, I guess, debatable. But in past discussions, it's my understanding that they pointed out that they do use it, and there's potential that they could have a rail car block in the path. We don't think they'd actually be that close to the mainline track if they were actually getting a delivery by rail, but that was a point that they had brought up in the previous discussions. So there's the crossing of their railroad spur, which we would need to get some property to get the path to cross at a 90-degree angle, like is preferred, with the current route extending north prior to the MG&E substation. There would be another easement from them kind of in between the city property and Bowman Park.
And so currently the issue is that they are not supportive of an outright sale of the easement, and we and that eminent domain laws don't allow for us.
That was at least how they felt about it in the most recent discussion, but it's been a while since we've started to back up those discussions, so we're hoping to reach out to them again and see if they'd be more receptive to it now.
If they were more receptive, then that could make this option completely viable?
Yes, provided we got funding.
Yeah. And would the funding be, would there be a difference in the accessibility or the chance of winning funding for either?
I don't think so.
I mean, I would say that this is a recognized regional gap in the network that's been there for quite a while, so I think there would be some support for either one, but if we can't resolve the real estate issue, then that particular alignment wouldn't be able to apply. That's a requirement to move forward with the funding application.
Renee, would if that part of the path is lit, does that change the personal safety issue or not really? Still isolated.
It's still isolated. I think, you know, some people would not feel comfortable going back there just because there is a lack of activity. You're kind of on the backside of all the buildings. So I think being lit would not, I mean, it would help, but it would not completely take care of that concern.
And then to both of you, if we did the red path, people could still do what they're doing now, which is to drive over to Fish Hatchery and be on the restful lane.
Yeah, I think, you know, some of the people there said that, you know, that would be, you know, their choice. Obviously, during certain times, they would just choose that. And I think that's what goes on now with some of our paths where we are a little bit more isolated, is that people choose a busier road during that period of time just because that feels safe in a different way than just the traffic safety issue.
Okay. Thank you.
Other comments? I just have one question. It sounds like with the safety concerns with the isolation, but there are also safety concerns with regard to the driveway crossings and, you know, the crash potential that we were discussing. So the alternative two might be safer from that point of view. Would that be correct?
Yeah, from the point of view of potential crashes, it certainly would be.
Yeah. So that, I mean, that's a trade-off.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, additional costs to real estate acquisition or real estate issues, but also safety. You know, I mean, understanding that isolation is of concern and something that we need to bear in mind, but the other safety issues are also something we need to be concerned about as well. So, Anjali, did you have something? And then Jessica?
Yeah, in terms of safety, I think one thing to consider is where is the safety measure that stops somebody from using it, right? Because those are kind of different, like, I know in my own personal life, I'm a bike commuter. There are some places that I don't bike to because the paths are completely ice. It's a mile and a half from my house. It's dark in the morning. It's completely isolated, so I choose not. I then drive, right? So that forces a totally different decision than if than a concern for me about, like, someone pulling out of their driveway, right? Like, as a regular cyclist, I know how to manage around that. And so some of these decisions might make a difference in which type of transportation somebody chooses to use, opposed to the safety might just make a difference. The types of things make a difference in your decision making.
Jessica?
What is our role in the, like, so this is an informational presentation?
You're asking for advice, correct?
Yes, we're, yep, to see if you think, so the multi-use path along Fish Hatchery Road, we're currently calling it option one. If you think that is a significant enough improvement over the existing condition for us to pursue, if we can't get any movement in terms of the private property purchases, or if you even prefer that route over alternative two, which would be the more traditional path route. So we're kind of looking on your input there to give us a little bit of guidance on how to move forward with this and potential application for grant funds if we can't find a way forward.
I mean, I guess I would say my personal input is I like the idea of trying to wait until we can have the actual path connection, because we already have a solution that seems, you know, there's some traffic stress with the existing workaround. There would be different traffic stress with an improvement, and it seems like for the money spent, it would make more sense to try to see if things change to make the path connection. And understanding that it's isolated, but the whole rest of the path in that section is also isolated, so it still seems like it's a better, that would be my.
Yeah, maybe just to reemphasize that, I think part of the isolation, I mean, it's geographic, like land use around the path, but it's also how many people use the path. And so part of the reason why not that many people use the Cannonball path is because it's not connected at the Fish Hatchery end. So if you close that connection, maybe it's also a reasonable assumption that the user count would go up, which might counteract at least some of the concern about isolation, because if you have lots of other people riding on the path, then that's probably helpful.
I think I'd go with Jessica as well. I think going for the red path really provides us with a new option. I think the blue path isn't going to go away. And what we talked about, where that driveway is and all that kind of stuff, I think it's a half to one, you know, that kind of thing.
So alternative two?
Yeah, that would be my preference.
Chris?
I would say that there's probably not a consensus here on that, because I really like alternative one in that it's, I mean, it's cheaper, in some ways easier to do. And I think even though there are some real safety concerns with crossings and things like that, to Anjali's point, the reason that those safety issues aren't there now is because people aren't biking. So I think that's worth considering, is that if this creates a connection for people that doesn't exist now, then it's a good option.
Bill?
I guess I agree with Chris. I like, at this time, option alternative one, because I think in the long term, I'd like to see the path go all the way down to the connection along the railroad right away. And I'm not sure if alternative two would.
Does alternative one?
Alternative one is the Fish Hatchery, and alternative two is right. Off of Fish Hatchery.
Right. Yeah. But didn't Grant earlier say that at one time, you know, is the possibility to take a look at extending the path along the corridor right next to the railroad is still potentially down the road if eminent domain.
I guess that was part of my rationale for referring alternative two, is that it would get us half the way there along that alignment. So then there's, I think it's basically that doorstep property that, you know, probably a decent chance that might get developed in the next 5 years, and that we could potentially secure some space there. And so if we were built, you know, half the way up there, in my mind, that would help us to get that
and
the, sort of the what I would call the true cancer cannonball alignment that would go all the way through.
Chris?
I would just add to alternative one that it also provides access along Fish Hatchery Road. So rather than just moving people from, you know, to the downtown from outside of the downtown. So it could be considered an improvement to Fish Hatchery Road that ought to be made anyway.
It would still have beneficial use after afterwards. It'll always be there.
Yep.
Okay, so at this point I have Justin and Harold, you preferred alternative two, correct?
Yes, at this point.
Yes. And Grant on alternative two, and Crystal for alternative one. Anybody else? Mike? Enjoy.
Well, that should give you some.
You have your thoughts as to which you prefer?
Well, my thought right now is probably alternative one.
Uh-huh.
For a couple of reasons. One, lower cost. And two, from a public safety perspective, having a that isn't as secluded is probably beneficial at this point, especially with some of the policing issues that we have.
Mm-hmm.
I could foresee at this juncture, you know, getting a lot of calls and a lot of issues with public safety on a path that was more secluded until we're in a position to meet those needs. The only issue with one is, you know, we would have to get the county involved. And also, I guess, in terms of the people that would use the path, it'd be, I guess, one question that comes to mind is, how it's currently maintained, because I would foresee that there's probably a lot of residents of Pittsburgh that probably use that path.
Yeah.
Is there ability to have more partnership with the county on maintaining the actual path then? Because it seems multiple municipalities, residents might use it.
I really can't say to that. I can say that obviously that Leopold neighborhood is a mix of Madison and Fitchburg, and obviously their users, some of those children attend Wright Middle School, so obviously they're coming up that path.
And I think engineering has offered up that, provided that the county does have some concerns with that alternative one option, that if they would be agreeable to it, we have offered up maintaining the path, since this would be a connection that we're kind of pushing forward.
And we'd already be out there because
yes.
of the camp.
Yeah, we're already maintaining.
We're already doing, and we're doing the wing recruitment. So this kind of lies in the middle of two things the city is already clearing.
You are clearing the cannonball.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you have a preference?
I feel conflicted.
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously the group is conflicted. We're pretty well split in terms of which direction. There was some discussion about if improvements were made to Fish Hatchery path. Would they still offer enough in the future to be able to proceed with the other path and have the connection that everybody's talking about and have both options? Or is that just, that's a lot of money. Yeah.
I would say long term, probably. But I think we would view this as not necessarily a completed link, but this is kind of the ultimate goal is making this connection. So we'd probably, you know, turn the resources on to other locations where we have missing links as well before coming back to try to build out the network a little bit further.
That will probably be further down the road, but it might be a moot point. Capital Newspapers doesn't agree to it.
Yes. Yeah, that was going to be my next question is how the commission overall felt about alternative one if that is potentially our only option, depending upon how the discussion goes about the private property purchase.
Yeah. So those of you who prefer alternative two, if it's not an option any longer, are people in favor of making the improvements along the fish hatchery path?
I'm probably not, just because then the issue is the current law in eminent domain, which also may change. I don't know. You know, it sounds like it's not that consistent with other, with how it's been in the past and the way that other organizations may be going. So one other, you know, when you brought up the fact that kids also use that to bike to school, one of, and I guess another, that changes to me too with the fish hatch, with the traffic, the conflicting traffic, because we talked about how experienced riders are used to watching for those dangers, but kids aren't. And so if experienced, you know, kids aren't also going to be using it probably at night when they may not feel safe. So to me, if, you know, that's ways on the safety to me too, to make alternative two, I think, a better, I would hate to give up possibility of alternative two in the future just because this other one is more expedient right now.
Probably with similar, I mean, I do think there's a tremendous value in extending the Cannonball along the rail alignment to Park/Bell Street at some point, and so to the degree that doing a project on Fish Hatchery to sort of widen the sidewalk would preclude that or push it off significantly, I wouldn't be in favor. I mean, ideally, we could have good routes on, you know, sort of in both corridors. But, I guess to the original question, I just don't think that the alternative one really presents us a very significant improvement over current state, to be honest. I mean, it's either people are using the bike lanes and they're okay with it, or they're riding on the sidewalk and there's very, I mean, at school time there's a bunch of kids walking, but otherwise it's kind of a, I don't know. So I wouldn't be opposed to any new and better and additional bike facilities in the city, but if the idea was, okay, we did this alignment on Fish Hatchery and now we're sort of not worried about that other extension, that would be concerning to me. And I just really, in the kind of grand scheme of things, if you sort of zoom out and look at it, really for the, like, Leopold neighborhood, et cetera, the idea that you could, the way that it would feel to get on that path and bike down to the farmer's market if it were just right along that rail corridor, hooked right up to the Wingra, to the Nolan, to the Cap City path, and you're there. Like, there's something about that that I think would be really significant action. It just doesn't happen if you go Cannonball, Fish Hatchery, and then technically you can take a ride and do all the rest of it, but it just doesn't. I don't think people are going to, it's not going to feel like the kind of connection that we have with the Southwest Path or the Cap City. So I do think it is sort of a weird, like, switching midstream. So, anyway.
And just one thing, I guess, to clarify when I said that, you know, we wouldn't be looking to make the connection, I was more referring to alternative two as it's currently laid out with along the railroad tracks to north through Bowman Park. If it was viable to go along the railroad tracks and make that connection, that we'd certainly consider that an option still.
Was the question, if alternative two is not a possibility, do people think the changes in alternative one would be enough to warrant moving forward with them? Was that what the question was?
Yes.
So what I heard Grant answering felt different than the question. What I heard you saying, whether it was the intention or not, was that I heard you responding to it as if alternative two was still an option. And what I think I was hearing was, if alternative two is not an option, do we still move forward with alternative one?
I think alternative two not being an option, meaning there's some land that's required, and if in the short term that's not an option, should we go with alternative one? And Jessica said that the only reason that wouldn't be an option is because right now we're precluded from that with eminent domain law. But the idea of saying, okay, well, then we're never going to be able to do it is sort of... So not being able to do it in the short term doesn't mean we can't do it in the long term, I guess, is the point that Jessica was making and that I'm sort of reinforcing.
And I guess I would go a step further with mine, too, to just say I also... We're looking at $1.3 million versus for alternative one versus $2 million for alternative two. I just don't think I would be... I don't know that... I think we could do more in other places in the city with $1.3 million to improve our bike network than this. I just don't feel like it's going to make that much better. And, you know, in fairness, I'm not a hardcore biker, but I don't think it would make it that much better to warrant using scarce resources for that small stretch.
So are there other comments on that particular question, Chris?
I just think that we could move on from this hypothetical, because if you explore both options a little bit more and decide that alternative two is challenging for whatever reasons and decide it's worth coming back and getting our endorsement of alternative one, you can do that.
At that time, then you look at other alternatives besides just fish hatchery, but of where that 1.3 would go, which would be a higher priority, which is not on the table today. Yeah, I mean, Gary could change my mind. It depends on what the behind door number three is.
Yeah. So that's a lot of feedback for you there, Jim and Renee.
Yes.
Sleep well.
Other questions for the group?
No, I don't think so. I think answered our questions for now.
So mixed review, which is what you've been hearing from everybody.
And that's how we felt about it, too.
Yeah.
So one other point, I guess, that somebody brought up regarding alternative one when we were at the public input meeting was that having the path along the street does give some visibility for people that maybe would like to bike but don't really understand how to bike and get to where they're going. That does give some visibility to a biking route, whereas the path just extended through, you kind of cross it on the street and then you don't see it again for a while. So I just thought that was an interesting point. That's why I brought up.
Other comments? Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
So the next item on the agenda is University Avenue, G4 University Avenue project update. The folks from City Engineering asked that we defer this to the January 8th meeting. So if I could have someone make a motion with regard to that.
So moved.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carried. Okay, so we'll hear more about University Avenue on January 8th. So traffic signal priority list, G5. We do have one registrant. Our typical way to move forward would be to have our short presentation on traffic signal priority. And then go to the public information or public testimony. and then have the commission's discussion. So, and certainly questions from the group as they're making their presentation as well. So, Jerry, Brian?
Jerry Shippa from City Traffic Engineering and Brian Smith from City Traffic Engineering.
Yeah, we're here to present the 2019 draft copy of the traffic signal priority list. This year there were 70 intersections added to the list and four taken off due to becoming signalized or planned signal or roundabout. For those of you who haven't been around and part of this process, throughout the year we collect requests for intersections to be signalized, and they can be of different natures. They can be from the public, from alders. And we'll take some preliminary data in the fall when school starts, put them on this list, do an initial ranking of those, take a look at the crashes to determine if the one of the crash warrants has been met, which is crash types that are considered possibly preventable. We, at this meeting, we're here to discuss what intersections we want to collect further data on, do some extended studies, and then in the next meeting, we'll present the results of the data, present the final traffic signal priority list, and from there, we'll present if we feel certain intersections need signals or not.
And could you also let folks know how many you think you would be able to do extended studies on, so that we don't
have
20 of them and you can only do five or whatever might be feasible?
Yeah, currently we are going to recommend five, and I can get into those later. Okay. As far as a number we feel capable, what do you think?
Often the traffic engineering is typically done anywhere from three to six. I think in a couple of years we might have done one or two more. But like right now Jerry just mentioned, we're going to be recommending five intersections. They're the first five intersections that are listed on this draft list. This is very, very much a draft list, which Jerry will get into later. But, you know, if there's some other intersections that this commission to look at and do a more in-depth further study to report back at our February 12th meeting, that's what we're here to discuss tonight. Is there any questions before we have the registrant speak, and then me and Jerry will come back after that, and but you all ask us questions. And
are there any questions about how they arrived at this? There was a lot of information sent out about traffic signal warrants and how this works, Chris.
So you're talking about the traffic signal priority list. That's the, what you say, the top five. That's what we're looking at. How are the top five currently sort of based on warrants? Is that how this is organized?
Yeah, the list is the entire, I think it's three pages, 100 two-way stop and 11 all-way stop controlled intersections. And they're ranked by their, what we consider the strongest warrant, which is warrant 1A or 1B. And it's a percentage of that warrant that's met. So if, for instance, Old Middleton and Rosa, which is number one in the second category, the highest it met was in the warrant 1B category, it met 117% of the major street and 99% of the minor street. Therefore, it was -1%, meaning warrant. But it's ranked off of those. There are other warrants that are considered, but we rank them off what we consider the strongest warrants.
This,
In previous years, we have typically always given, handed out last year's final list to you, and we didn't give the, our final list until, you know, the last meeting. At the last year's meeting, it was, we were asked if we could give a more updated list, you know, more of a, which, you know, would still have to be our draft list, but something that is based on some of the current volumes that we've collected, some of the current crashes that we have analyzed. So, you know, that's why this list is different than what we've done typically. This is more of a draft. Some of these numbers, some of those ones that are listed in the top five, as well as some other ones, are based on some raw counts, which we're going to go back and do some more manual intense data collection, and probably like one of them on the top, you'll notice that there's a bunch of comments on the last column. The top intersection did not have the letter F. It had almost every other letter in the alphabet, but it didn't have the letter F. And F is in our notes, or legend, is a right turn reduction factor. So, if you know, after we go out and look, you know, we'll probably be reducing that some, so it may not rank as high as it is right here. And, you know, some other criteria will be looked at as well. The crashes, Jerry had put down the total crashes in these columns instead of just the crashes that are types considered to be correctable by a traffic signal. So, some of those things are going to be reduced as well. One of them that stuck out to me was number 26 on the list that showed a total of 10 crashes over the 1 year,
right,
which is a very large number of crashes. Right. However, I know that Jerry had already reported to me that five of those 10 crashes are types considered to be correctable by a signal, which is significant, and that's something that you really want to look at, because, you know, even though we rank everything by the first couple of columns at warrant 1A and warrant 1B, those are the easiest ones for us to rank, and to rank them by all of the different columns is gets to be just like an impossible type of an endeavor. So there are intersections that can rank, you know, somewhere in the middle of the list, or even, you know, further down, that based upon other consideration, you know, can be definitely warranted for a traffic signal.
And in the case of the number 26, East Washington and Dickinson, well, we look back at previous years and found that 2018 was kind of an anomaly. We had 5 total and only 1 considered a type preventable in 17, 0 out of 3 considered preventable in 2016, and 0 out of 2 in 2015. So 5 out of 10 jumps out is a big difference. So that may have been because in 2018 we had flooding on East Johnson, and, you know, traffic is kind of, you know, people are trying to find different ways, and maybe there's just a lot of unfamiliar traffic to that area. So
and the Yahara path was closed.
Right.
And that's why we always, you know, before making a decision that an intersection should be signalized based upon a crash warrant, it's typical to look at either a 3 or 5 year average of crashes, because it's often the case that you have an anomaly for some particular year. Sometimes it's for no reason whatsoever. Sometimes it could be for reasons that was just discussed here, like the flooding, which may or may not have been the contributing factor.
Just to clarify, staff recommend we do further study, more detailed study on 5 intersections, which lists the first 5 based on the first page, which is, you know, number 1 to 4 in the first category, side street, stop control intersection study with the minimum requirements met, and also the second category, which is the same traffic control, but it didn't meet the minimum requirements, which is Old, Middleton, and Rosa. because that one is only, you know, 1 point away. And we received three requests for that this year. But if you go to the third page, you also notice another category called Always Stop Intersection Study. So we have a Highland Region Speed Intersection. So that's event number one in that category. And, we say it's 27% over meeting the warrant. However, we do not recommend starting it at this time. Brian, can you explain why it's that way?
We just had a very large neighborhood meeting on that particular intersection due to a recent incident that had happened there. We have done a very extensive studying on that intersection, and there's a very good low crash rate at the intersection, which is very typical of a lot of always stop intersections like that one is. The neighborhood did have some recommendations for us to make some changes at the intersection. A couple of the changes were to add some flashing beacons, red beacons, for a couple of the approaches, because one of the large complaints was the vehicles coming up Highland. I'm not sure if many of you are familiar with Highland Region Speedway, but I'm hearing some yeses. There's a lot of complaints about that high speed coming up Speedway. One of the suggestions was to rename Speedway to something else. So that was one of the approaches that they would like to have a flashing red beacon for. And then there was a couple of other recommended changes for the short term. One of them was to restrict the southbound left turn from Highland onto eastbound Regent. We've checked with Metro, and Metro would be okay with us making some geometric changes to take out that left turn lane that they have, and then they would make a left turn to the through and have us mark it as left turns, only allowed by buses or emergency vehicles. We want to get an okay from police, and then that's something that we might be able to do, not this year, construction season's too late. And then there was another thing about change to one of the median islands in the center of the intersection. Just about everybody at the meeting was hopeful that sometime in the future, when the opportunity arises, that we could change the geometry to bring to make the intersection more of a typical four-legged intersection. If you're familiar with it, it's got a very unique geometry, which makes it more confusing than a typical intersection. So that's sort of the history on that one, if anyone has any more questions. And our studies did clearly show that a signal was going to cause a lot more delay, and we believe that it would cause more crashes at the intersection, because typically when you go from a very low crash rate intersection of an all-way stop and you make it a signalized intersection. And there's other disadvantages of having it signalized as well. I try not to belabor the point, since I know you've got a big agenda tonight.
Okay.
Could you speak a little bit about, you don't have to go through each one, but just in terms of the warrants that are used, because that's sort of the foundation for the ranking system, right? And I guess particularly one of the things that I'd like to consider in terms of the signals is improving crossings for people on foot and people on bike. And in my estimation, these warrants aren't really designed to do that very well. There is a minimum pedestrian volume warrant 4, and some of the volume warrants for the sort of main road
again, could show you if it's sort of a busy street, but when I think of those that are particularly tough to cross, you know, Packers and Six, which I've brought up in years past, I think it's 15 or 20, I forget what the number was, but that's, you know, I think it's like 120 feet or something like that. I mean, like six or seven lanes with almost no median in them. I mean, a little tiny median that you, I mean, hard to use. And then, you know, cars' speeds are probably 45 to 55. I mean, often, including sort of this little bit of a blind curve there. So the exercise of trying to cross Packers at 6th Street if you're walking or if you're on a bicycle is just seems like a tremendously stupid thing to do. Does that come up in the warrants? And if not, how would we, I mean, is that just sort of narrative stuff that we kind of talk about and that's maybe why we would select locations that aren't just in the top five? Or if our goal was to use signals to improve connectivity for walking and biking, kind of how do we factor that in with the current warrants and the kind of gridded system that we're looking at?
Yeah, I'll just say that these warrants are developed nationally by the MUTCD, and as far as, I mean, this kind of hits on a point that was brought up earlier as far as, you know, if it's perceived as a very dangerous crossing, how many people are going to cross. So I can see that kind of coming in here. I will say if an intersection is brought up as an issue for pedestrians and it's put on this and it's studied and it's found that, well, it doesn't meet warrant, it's not just dropped off the face of the earth in our minds. It then usually finds its way to our pedestrian bike improvement list, and we look at other ways, like, can we install a rapid rectangular flashing beacon or some geometric changes to the roadway or bump outs, islands, things like that. Do you have anything you wanted to add?
No, but at any there's a lot of times we'll get a request, you know, from, you know, any of the users of the roadways, the, you know, pedestrians, bicycles, motor vehicles, saying that they, you know, want another signal at another location. But then you got to see where the other signals are relative to it. I don't think there's one really all that close to six because you don't have one onto a street. So, you know, that's not a thing. But you do want to, you know, there are warrants. Like you said, there was the pedestrian warrant. There is, you know, it's got, and it does have reduced values for pedestrians when you do have certain speeds. Like I believe it's the 85th percentile speed over 35 miles per hour that you would use a lower threshold for crossing. Some of the reasons why some of these thresholds are provided is because, you know, just putting in a traffic signal for safety reasons, there are negatives associated with traffic signals. And, you know, the basic rule of thumb, and as stated in the manual on uniform traffic control devices, is that a traffic signal should never be installed anywhere unless an engineering study can show that you expect the traffic signal to improve either safety and or operation, either one, safety or operation, and, you know, hopefully both, but, you know, those are the main criteria. And so we try to use the lowest, you know, type of control that will provide the greatest operation and safety for an intersection. And sometimes with geometric controls, the 6th Street is kind of a unique area there. It's not an easy geometric. I can't think of how wide the median is at the. I think we've talked about that intersection in the past. It's sort of too bad that we did already have the Packers Avenue, Pennsylvania. That whole area was improved a number of years ago, so it's sort of a I believe that is within the improved area, is it not? So that might be a little more difficult. I would love to see an intersection that does not have a good, safe median area for pedestrians to make good, safe, crossing, so you can just cross one at a time, which is always a great improvement for an intersection that doesn't have it. But there are such things as RRFBs. We did recently install RRFBs at the Schlemgen and Packers intersection. We were a little concerned about it because of the speeds of the traffic there, but we did a pretty in-depth, exhaustive field review of it, counting, I don't know how many hours that Jerry watched of motorists approaching while they were, the RRFBs were activated, and it was quite impressive at the number of drivers that did stop for it. So, maybe that's a solution that could be looked at this location. Not that it can't be looked at for a signal.
Yeah, but I think Alder Foster brought up a very good point. even though, according to the MUTCD signal warrants, even though it shows that number is below the warrant, it does not automatically prevent us from considering a signal.
Yeah.
So, that's one of the reasons why we bring a list to this body for input. So, if the body sees, any of the intersection on the list that does not, has a positive number, but still has think there are good reasons to further study it, definitely let us know. We will consider it. So that's why we provide opportunities for the public to come to make comments as well. So,
Gerald?
So follow-up question about pedestrian warrants specifically. So it says that you need a certain volume and you need certain gaps. And I mean, the striking thing about the list is that none of the intersect, like all of them are no. So I'm wondering, do you actually have the pedestrian volume data for each of these intersections? And if so, how do you get that? And how do you, what's the measure of that frequency of gaps in major street traffic? I mean, those metrics seem to be actually difficult to get, especially for this long list of intersections. So I wonder if some of these nodes are actually we don't know because we didn't actually count.
Yeah, I can give one example where we collected the data not through hose counts, but we had a nearby traffic camera. So just aiming it at the intersection and counting, and that is Henry and West Washington. Mm-hmm. And during the hours, roughly, I also counted the pedestrians crossing, and even at a near downtown intersection, that was only around 90 pedestrians crossing, which is. If I remember right, I don't have the chart with me, but I believe that was also below the warrant too. So, so if you take that and then kind of compare to some of these further down the list that are further outside of the built-up developed area, they're not going to meet that pedestrian warrant.
An answer to your question, though, is not all of these intersections have had, a person going out there and counting all of the pedestrians. It's a very laborsome type of job to do. Typically, when an intersection, in my experience in all the years I've been here, I would say that when the pedestrian warrants are being close to being met or even anywhere near being met, we've typically gotten a request from the public saying that they wanted to have that they think a signal should be put in because of that reason, and those are the intersections that we go out and do those studies for. Or if we happen to know, just based upon our own, knowledge of the area, my voice is starting to go, it's getting worse. like a lot of the ones around the Capitol Square, you know, like we put a number of them at some of the outer ring intersections that were, you know, within the last 7, 8, 9 years that we didn't have them before. And the vast majority of those were, or probably all of those were put in based upon pedestrian warrants. There's several other intersections in the city. I think that when, seems to me that when Dryden and Northport went in many years ago, I believe that was a pedestrian warrant. There's other ones along Williamson Street that went in for a pedestrian warrant.
Near UW campus, okay, last one is
there's a number of
Ultra Street University Avenue that's really based on pedestrian volume.
So there's been many intersections in the city that have been put in based upon the pedestrian warrants.
Maybe just a recommendation for the future, like distinguishing between the intersections where you actually have count data versus it's like, yeah, I mean, you're assuming you don't, but I think that would be helpful for us in the future.
You just like us to have it in a blank instead like, of a yes or no.
Yeah.
And
if there are counts, having the actual counts so that we know it's like, you know, 90, which doesn't meet 100, but.
Ken?
Just to clarify, so we have somebody who wants to test.
We have.
Talk. But I, before that, what are we expected to do tonight? I need to get some focus.
Okay, what we're expected to do is they have 5 recommendations for intersections that will have extended study performed. And we, as the commissioner, are asked to approve that.
Okay, so thumbs up or thumbs down on
either
five.
Agree with them or to say, you know, we shouldn't. We don't think you should do this one. We think you should do this other one, or we think you should do these 5 plus one other one, or,
okay,
you know,
that's
understand the capacity that they have.
I think it might be time for testimony, then, or okay. For her to
yes.
make this
what statement. Unless there's any other specific questions, we do have one registrant, Catherine Grothy. I'm not sure I'm saying your name right, Catherine. 5344 Congress Avenue, Unit 3, here representing the High Crossing Neighborhood Association, supports some action and is available to answer questions. And what she said here is would like to see a stoplight, traffic signal, or roundabout structure for the High Crossing Cross Hill and or the High Crossing City View intersection, which looks like number 1 on your list, if I'm not mistaken. Both road intersections with High Crossing are almost impossible to turn left onto High Crossing or cross as a pedestrian across High Crossing during morning and evening commute times. Cross Hill is already on the priority list. So you said you didn't wish to speak, but you're welcome to speak if you'd like. You would have 3 minutes.
So I pretty much made all of my points on that statement there. I think it is very important as someone who lives in the area. We have a lot of businesses. We have a lot of auto businesses, which brings in a lot of through traffic as well as regular commuters and all the apartments and condos that have built up in the area recently. And it is very difficult to make a left-hand turn from the number one priority at Cross Hill or from City View, which is a few blocks down, onto High Crossing. Every day, I thank goodness, I'm very glad to have a car that has a V6 engine so that I can get through. And the fact that I feel like I need that to get through, I think is very telling of how difficult it is, and it needs some kind of traffic adjustment. There is a speed limit of 30 miles an hour. People often do not follow that. I can say I sometimes do and sometimes don't. I think a stoplight or a roundabout structure would help slow down and improve the flow of traffic. One or the other, I don't know what the studies are, one versus another, but I do feel it is a very important thing to do. We have a lot of apartments and condos in that area, plus all of the car dealerships in that area right across the street that just really bog down the traffic.
Are there any questions for the registrant?
So you're coming, so High Cross is like this, and the issue is, are you coming this way or this way with the left turn thing?
So I'm coming from Burke Road area.
Okay.
So depending on, I live on Congress. So you have Burke Road, which comes down into City View, and then you have Congress, which I live on, is parallel to High Crossing. So we have two different ways to get access to High Crossing and either the interstate in either direction.
Okay. So it's just the continuous traffic on High Crossing.
There is continuous traffic. And because people are going different speeds, there's no gap in traffic. If there was a consistent speed, I feel like there would be gaps in traffic where people could then turn left more easily or cross. But at any given time, you have a steady stream of traffic.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions for the registrant? Okay, thank you. Thanks. Okay, so we've been asked, so there's a recommendation from traffic engineering to do further study on the first five that are shown, numbers 1 through 4 in the first section and number 1 in the second section. And there's been a lot of discussion about, even though in the third section, number 1 has a positive number, that there's other things that they're looking at doing with the neighborhood. So they're not recommending extended study, which it sounds like you've already done the extended study on that one. Is that correct, Brian?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're moving their recommendation.
All the top 4 plus Old Middleton and Rosa, and good luck with that.
Okay, so there's a motion on the table.
Second.
And a second. Further discussion. Grant?
Yep. So I would be interested in getting more info on 3 other ones, and I think they're all connected with either current or planned work that's happening. So one is number 6, the Dickinson and Williamson. And I think that is already on the radar to be considered as part of the Shanks Corners study that's coming up. I'm pretty sure that the boundary is basically to there or just west of there. So that's one, and I've heard from the traffic committee at with MNA mostly around sort of school crossing issues, and the current crossing guard is stated it's still a real problematic crossing. So that's one. The other is 6th and Packers that I mentioned already, and that actually came up in the Oscar Mayer plan that they're working on. That was
number 15, is that, Grant?
Correct, yeah. And I don't remember, I'm thinking maybe the Oscar Mayer plan went to PPPB and not here.
I don't think we've seen that.
Yeah, so they gave us sort of an early, it's in progress right now, and there's a number of kind of proposed street changes to that area. And they talked about maybe a new street connection north of Commercial that would be signalized, and they also had 6th as a potential. This is one that I think is a really major bike connection, again, between east and north sides. There's really, from essentially Fordham all the way up to Commercial, there's no other way to cross because of the rail tracks and a bunch of other things. And it is just so fast and wide. And then the third one is Main and Proudfit, so number 42. So that there has been some improvements there just this last year with some improved markings, and that's a bike boulevard, and I think that was one of the candidate projects for the TAP funds to do some additional improvements on that corridor, and this is by far the weakest link in that route as well. Just real difficult because cars come so fast around from West Washington onto Proudfit, and you have very little time to react.
So to be official, I guess I would move that to add those three to the list for consideration.
We have a motion on the table already for the first.
Yeah, I would think I'm moving an amendment to add those three to the five.
Okay. Do you have the capacity to do eight?
But yeah, I believe you know, we can probably invest more time on those intersections. So I would say maybe if you know, we look into it sometime if it becomes obvious that we may not recommend it, maybe we'll, instead of doing, you know, a full study, maybe we kind of kind of stuff over there and report back. But we can spend our time doing look at those three.
So there was a motion that we amend the motion, Chris?
Question, clarification on that. So the idea is that you're only going to move forward with so many of these in the near future, but so by adding more to the list, it might reprioritize some of them. That's the idea. Okay.
I had a question that I'd like to ask. I don't know if this is the right time or.
I think people are trying to decide if there's going to be a second to that motion to amend. So, related to that, though.
So, I'll second.
Okay. So.
What were the numbers? 6, 15, and what?
Numbers 6, 15, and 42. Did I get that right, Grant?
Thank you.
So, all those in favor of amending the motion?
Sorry, are we not doing discussion?
Beg your pardon? Is there discussion with regard to that? I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Of course. Go ahead.
So, I have a question about hackers and six, because as you pointed out, I think a lot of that will depend on what's happening with the Oscar Mayer development plan. So I'm just wondering if now is the best time to study that, if conditions might possibly change quite a bit 2-3 years from now. And then whatever we find out in the study now might not be as valuable anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, and it should be in Legistar, the presentation we got at TPPB, but from what they shared, it certainly wouldn't make the value of a signalized crossing there less. I think I call it out because they basically showed that from first to commercial, and then it's grade separated at Aberg. I mean, it's basically all, you know, almost towards the airport. It's a freeway, and so the broad recommendation or draft recommendation at the time was to add potentially several signals in there to kind of get that whole Packers corridor to sort of bring it closer to an urban kind of setting. So I would say it would only reemphasize the need and value, but I think that there's value to do it now, but particularly 6th and East Wash got a signal like 2 years ago, maybe 2 or 3.
Around there.
You know, sort of when that roundabout with Winnebago and with all the development that's already happened there at Union Corners and what more is planned there, again, that's the primary connection anywhere east of there to get to the north side. So that, and 6th Street is a really good bikeable street, except for that one crossing. So I think that there's a strong case to look at it now, and there may not be any big movement for a very long time on, with the Packers or with the Oscar property.
So, yeah, I think both the commission members had really good points on that. It's our original plan, actually, to look at this with the Oscar Mayer corridor study to see whether this is the best route for bicycles, maybe for, you know, other traffic to cross Packers. That was the original idea, but you know, with the staffing level at a DOT, I'm not sure when that study can become completed. So I think we can spend some staff time looking more into the intersection now. If we come to a point that we feel like it might be, you know, we couldn't really give a clear answer, and it might be worthwhile to wait a bit more. We bring that information back to the commission. So that's the way to go.
Chris?
I'll say that while I'm not really in favor of putting more work on your department, this feels like the only opportunity to sort of elevate other intersections, because otherwise this list will come forward next time and we just do the same thing, I think. Is that right? Okay.
Bill? Are you done, Chris?
I was interested in Metro's comments. I see they're on the log, but I guess were those looked at all, or you know, what are?
Do you want to come up and?
What is Metro's thoughts on?
How to find a microphone.
The list, and there were several others that I guess.
All right. Yeah.
Okay, as far as that they had comments on.
You don't talk with Drew.
There's a good reason for that too. short answer is not really. I mean,
so is there one on the list of the on the log? Is there anyone that you know stood out, or is Metro is more concerned about than others?
How long do you got for me to?
You got 3 minutes.
No. nothing. No, not really. Nothing that.
But it is obviously it was stood out enough that you did send a.
Oh sure.
A log request to the traffic.
Yeah, because we're not able to get across several lanes of traffic as fast as some cars, and you know we got a little more length.
Yeah, the one that's jumped out at me just because my bus goes through that, and that's on Sheboygan and Siegel.
Yeah,
that is a tough one.
It is a tough one,
and this one is too.
What number is that on here? Anybody know?
Number 5. We got that one covered.
No, Sheboygan and Siegel wouldn't get it as one of the top 5.
Right.
But it's number five on the list.
Right, right. I was just telling him that.
Yeah, it didn't make the cut at this point.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But would that be considered the?
That would be of all of them. That's
hard.
And actually the Packers ramp. I think at Packers and Aberg is an even bigger deal because we've got Route 4. Yeah.
Which one is that one, Drew?
I don't even know if it's on there.
Is that on the list anywhere, you guys?
Yeah, that was one of the new ones that was added because we sent an email out to our department in Metro asking, we're getting ready to prepare this. Are there any, or we're getting ready to collect counts. Are there any intersections that, you know, anyone has heard of that we should throw in there? And that's where a lot of these Metro requested ones came from.
So the without me having to go through each and every
one,
where is that on the list?
That is 88.
Thank you. So, Drew, you're saying that the one that's Aberg and Packers Avenue northbound ramp would be the biggest issue for Metro?
That one scares me the most, yeah. I don't want to use alarmist language, but we've got Route 4 making a left turn across Aberg there. As it heads towards, it's coming off of Packers and it wants to make a left onto Aberg to go to the north transfer point. It does that
every half hour, and then we also have Route 27 trying to make that turn during the kind of the peak hours. It can be a little bit of a hair-raising experience if you have hair.
Yeah.
Looking at the crash numbers, they're higher than a lot of others as well. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. I think people, they get impatient when they're sitting there, and then they'll try to... I've seen cars and buses do this, so they'll come out in, so they're sort of in the median. And what ends up happening then is you're kind of blocking a lane from both westbound and eastbound on Aberg when you're doing that. And that's the part that bothers me the most, I think.
Just to kind of follow up on the request that I had, part of what, and I asked some questions earlier on, but part of what I would hope for is that the reason that I'm suggesting some of these that aren't at the top of the list is because I think they are for more challenging from that ped bike crossing perspective, and I don't feel that the current Warren system captures that very well. So in terms of doing that additional review, what would be really helpful if it's possible, I don't know how hard it is, but to actually get some information to share back about what are the sort of lengths of the crossing. There's formulas for, you know, how much time it takes then a pedestrian, you know, seniors versus whatever. So how much time is sort of needed for the crossing, and then actually looking for number of gaps that are that length of time or longer, because I didn't see that defined in the warrant about the gaps thing. So, you know, obviously if it's a wider street, you're going to need more. A gap is going to have to be longer in order to actually.
There is in the detailed warrant. Okay. So the you know, what was written on the provided to you was more of a summary.
Basically, if rather than just coming back and saying, and there was only, you know, 23 pedestrians, so it doesn't meet the pedestrian warrant, if it could be more shaped around what does it actually take to cross and what are those opportunities, that would be really helpful. And regarding the Dickinson and Williamson one, if that is already going to be taken up as part of the Sinks Corner study and it doesn't, it's not helpful to do it ahead of time, you could, I mean, I would be fine with not having you do that as part of this, as long as it's going to happen, you know, in the next quarter. So I would just defer to staff whether it makes sense to do any of that work now, or like I said, if it's going to happen anyway, you know, this coming year, I would be fine with just letting it be part of that project as well. So whatever works better.
Is that with Dickinson?
That's the Dickinson-Williamson one, yeah.
So is that amendment to your amendment?
Yeah, and in years past it's been a little bit more informal, where it's as long as staff says, yeah, we can do it, then we can do it. But yeah, that would be.
Dickinson, Williamson being, just want to clarify, Batch and Hullong Bay.
Oh, shoot, I've been saying the wrong. Yeah.
I just wanted to clarify because Dickinson right. And Thornton both kind of have this now with the RFP.
Thornton is the one that I've got the request on, and that's part of this because it's not going to go all the way down to.
No, I was just wanting to clarify. So Thornton and.
That's the one that I've been talking about.
Okay.
And that's not even. Is it on the list anywhere?
I'm not sure.
Sorry.
Clarify why Thornton, since the bike path continues? You know,
because it's the Yahara River, it's the main school crossing because it's Lapa Marquette.
Oh, so it's pedestrian one, rather than bike.
Yeah, it's mainly pedestrian. So there's a crossing guard there, and there's lights on both sides. And so I think one of the ideas with that study is to maybe consider shifting like the Rogers light to Thornton. So having the Thornton and Riverside kind of lights connected so that
So it's really the Thornton one is the one that I've been talking about this whole time. So
number six really wasn't the one that you wanted to add?
Yeah, no, it wasn't. Sorry.
Okay.
We just installed a set of RFPs over there anyway.
Right, exactly. Here, yeah. All my comments were about Thornton,
okay.
Which, again, is that's part of that upcoming study. So as long as it is, we could just take all of that off, and then I would only be asking for Packers and six and profit. And
so whoever seconded, so Harold, I think you seconded. Are you okay with the amended motion is, if there is such a thing, would be the first five plus number 15 and number 42. Correct?
Yeah. Thank you. Sorry.
Further discussion about that? Bill?
I guess I'd be interested in the Aberg and Packers Northbound ramp. I guess with the discussion that we've had a little bit regarding Metro and I think it would also improve cars too. There is some
number 88.
Yes, if it crashes there.
Okay, so just to simplify things, no matter where we are with all the motions in the second, back up to eight with the first five on the list plus. Number 15, number 42, and number 88. Correct? Bill, that's one that you wanted to add in, which is the one that Drew suggested was of the most concern to Metro. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we are at this point. So further discussion. Chris?
I think I'm going to support the amendment, but it feels really arbitrary to me. So I think in the future we need to see some other indication of how else we might be identifying intersections that are in need that aren't meeting warrants so that we don't go through this sort of wish list of intersections.
My recollection is this is kind of how it went last time, was we followed the warrants and then there was discussion about some of the other intersections for various reasons. Is that pretty much what's happened in the past?
Which I think I would just add that in addition to, you know, you seeing which ones meet the warrants or are closest to meet the warrants, we also, you know, provide the documents of all of our correspondence that we've gotten, all of our requests that we've gotten. So then we, you know, those are probably the ones that we next consider, in more detail or look at a bit closer because of the fact that we've gotten those requests.
So are any of the amended intersections on that list of requests?
Jerry?
Say that again.
The intersections that were proposed to add, are these justified through requests?
Requested the Aberg.
The junction, is that what you mean, junction target?
That's it. Yeah. So
all of those first five, those were all there were requests by.
Input.
So there was input for all of those.
Yeah. So maybe we should kind of, step back a little bit. Yeah. So this is more like a response to, the public requests that we received throughout the year. Because there are lots of different citizens watch traffic signals at different locations. So how can the city has a process to evaluate and select those, because synchronization is a major commitment for the city, for the community. It involves a lot of investment up front and also, annual maintenance after that. It also changes the street a lot. It makes certain movements a lot easier, but it also has adverse effects such as increase, rare and crashes.
and make a side street more a cost-through route. So because of those reasons, the city has a policy requiring staff to do this, do evaluation and bring to the Transportation Commission for feedback and go back to do more study and come back for approval. So everything here is from some kind of request to the public. However, though, we do have another our situation is that something is not requested by the public, but staff recommend that based on kind of more proactive actions, if we notice the issues or if there's a big project happening, it makes sense to do it. We bring that to the Transportation Commission as well for approval. So I can see, in the future, for example, Blair and Main, the intersection, as a project progress, and when we are, as we go through the kind of public information process, and when we have more certainty that we want to propose traffic signal over there, we will probably come to the commission as well. So hopefully that kind of gives you the background on the process and where it stands with other signals.
Do you have a question? Yeah. I thought you did, but we got sidetracked there.
I would agree that it feels a little bit arbitrary, and maybe one way to just make it easier in the future is if we just had data on, number of requests or complaints you receive so that we can prioritize. And I don't know if that's, I don't think that the goal of the commission is just to add more work. And so if our goal is really to just be, helping to advance the public interest, then if there's information that we know that, okay, there's strong public reaction on this, or this, then we could maybe make for everybody by just saying, okay, well, these are, the most requested ones, and let's go with a couple of these additional ones.
Do you guys track that?
We do track comment. It's never a determination on whether or not we signalize it, but it's often a determination on whether or not we do a study on something.
Right, that's
right.
It's helpful to know.
We get a lot of requests.
And yeah, that's what we're looking at right now.
Right. We also notify everyone who made a request, the other persons, all the others, and also the neighborhood association, all the neighborhood associations. For when it goes to Transportation Commission, for initial kind of direction for more depth study, and eventually for final approval. So we want to provide kind of platform here for the public to come to make comments as well. So sometimes when there are lots of interest for intersection, you actually have quite a few people here making public comments. Today you only have one. Sometimes we have quite many. So that kind of also gives the commission members an idea about how many citizens are interested in pursuing it. So I think it might be a little bit hard to kind of track how many requests that we receive throughout the year. But we can give a try. Even if we did not add a column here, but we can point out the ones that are most frequently request ones. For example, one of the reasons we recommend for a study for Old Middleton and Rosa is because there are multiple requests this year for it.
There are some intersections where we haven't had a request, but we've done a further study on and actually recommended a signal. One good example that I can think of is Broome and Gorham. That wasn't being requested for a signal. Most people thought it was pretty easy, but there was more crashes than there should have been at that intersection. We know it was basically because it was trucks parking where there was no parking signs, and we tried enforcement over a number of years. We tried to, you know, change the signage and go back to enforcing again, and year after year, the crash rate continued to be high, so we had to signalize it. We were not getting requests for that signal, but you know, so we don't just look at that column 1A and 1B. Those are like some of the best indicators in general, but not all the time.
Somebody over here, Bill.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know if this to Yang or to guys. I guess I'm not as interested in necessarily just, you know, today we're looking at signals. But to me, some of these intersections need study, period. Geometric improvements. The Highland Regent Speedway. There could be a number of geometric improvements made to that intersection, I think. But, yeah, not signals. I don't think signals are a solution at all for that location. So I guess, how does this get back to engineering then?
Sure, that's a great question. So, you know, this is mainly a way to evaluate the signal requests, so that it's not, you know, arbitrarily decided by staff, but rather, you know, go through a public process. You know, sometimes when we did the first study for intersections, it makes a lot of sense to try signals. For that case, obviously, everybody's just happy. But a lot of other times, you know, during our more in-depth review, we pointed out actually, you know, traffic signal is not a good idea. We do not recommend it, but there are other things that we can do to improve it. For example, maybe some geometric change, and then we'll, you know, work with engineering to find opportunities to get those done. It might be, you know, a set of RFBs, the flashers. So we may, you know, refer that to a, you know, different list for consideration, or other countermeasures. So I think this is a component of, you know, the countermeasures or toolbox that we use. But I think it's kind of a, you know, important component of that whole system.
If I can just clarify, didn't you say, Brian, that you've done extensive additional study on Highland Region and Speedway already?
Oh, yes. We've done numerous ones over the years, and we totally agree that some geometric changes would be a great improvement. And, you know, like to keep a four-way stop, but to have it look more like a typical type of intersection, there's actually been some draft drawings. It's going to require some property from the school district on the, you know, north side of the west leg, and, you know, a few other little tweaks to it. And we know that at some time in the future, when we're getting some type of, you know, construction reconstruction project in that area, that's something that that we've already talked with engineering. When we had the neighborhood meeting just recently, a representative from engineering was with us, and we meet with engineering quite frequently to go over projects.
I think we can vote. I think they're saying they have the capacity to do these studies. My guess is some of these are going to require a whole lot more work. Others, they're going to be able to make a fairly quick decision that either says something needs to be done, but it's impossible to make it better. You know, and I think we could just vote on these eight.
So under consideration is 1 through 4, in other words, everything in the first section. In the second section, we have 1, 15, 42, and 88 is what I have as the current recommendation. Is there any further discussion before we take a vote? Everybody with me on the ones we're talking about? Further discussion? OK.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, motion carried. All right, thanks. Good discussion and helpful suggestions for the process in the future as we go forward. Okay, next on our agenda is G6, the feasibility of changes to the attendance at the agenda setting meetings. Chris, we deferred from last time since you had suggested we add this on the agenda, but you weren't here last time. So let me just say what our current process is so everybody understands. I attend the agenda setting meetings along with staff, and we, you know, certainly go over everything that's been referred to the commission. I try very hard to balance. You know, we certainly take into account and add to the agenda everything that needs attention during that time frame. We have to understand what's ready to come and what isn't. We look at our work plan. We take into consideration recommendations or suggestions that have been made from individuals on the commission at the meeting. So every meeting we have on our agenda an item, commission member suggestions on future agenda items. We also have a quarterly review of our work plan, which is things that we're going to be looking at on a quarterly basis, and we'll have that on our agenda for the next meeting. So that's another way to have input into it. Currently under MGO 33.01, it is my responsibility to set the agenda, but I certainly welcome feedback and take that all into consideration. But also say that it's a very fluid process. After we had our agenda setting meeting last Monday, we had two items that were requested to add to the agenda, the Cannonball Bike Path discussion and the University Avenue project. So I said, okay, we can do that, but, you know, that's too much for us to do in one night. So we took off the crash report and pushed it off to the January 8th meeting. And, you know, Metro wasn't ready for their quarterly report, so we pushed that off to January 8th. So after the meeting, we had those two things that came on, and then, you know, things changed. Two of them weren't ready. And all of this takes place outside of the agenda-setting meeting. So we have 22 TC meetings, and we have 22 agenda-setting meetings during the course of the year. And just one last thing that I would say, and then, Chris, I'd like your thoughts about, you know, how you'd like to see more input into the agenda. One downside from my personal point of view is that after talking to John Strange to make sure I understood the process and what we would need to do operationally, we would need to post the meetings. And, you know, he said we didn't have to take minutes or, you know, procedurally we didn't have to do that. But he was very specific that we can't talk about the items. We can't have any substantive discussion about the items. And personally, I do have an opportunity at these meetings to talk to staff about the items. And I would lose that opportunity, and we'd have to, you know, set another meeting in order to do that. Because whatever is posted on our agenda would be what we would have to stick to. And the way the TPPD, the policy board does it, it looks like they just post for the next meeting. We talk about not just the next meeting, but we talk about the meeting after that and when is Metro going to be ready for their service changes. So if we did open it up, and I'm certainly willing to consider that, as long as we figure out the logistics, I would want to post future agenda topics because the meeting really needs to talk not just about what's going to happen at the next meeting, but, you know, what's coming down the road as well. So, Chris, that's a long introduction, but it's kind of what the process is right now. So you're the one who brought this forward, and I think the policy board is doing this now, as I understand it. I don't know, just for a couple months now, is that right?
I think so. Grant, do you know how long?
2-3 months, maybe?
So I guess I'll just say that thank you for putting it off since I wasn't here last time.
Yeah.
And since I did bring it up, I'm talking through some of these things that you just raised and thinking about it. I'm not convinced that it does make sense, but I think it's worth discussing. TPPB actually just did decide to move away from these agenda setting meetings because we created more TPPB meetings in order to create time to talk about the agenda. So I'm open to thoughts on this. I have had another thought since, which is that I'm recognizing that as meetings pile up on my plate and I may not be able to make it to as many agenda setting meetings.
Yeah, it's a lot of meetings.
It creates an opportunity that many folks probably also miss. So yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I would encourage us to consider is when we look at our work plan next quarter, I think what we have on our agendas, and we talked about trying to balance the quarters more evenly. We talked about not spending as much time talking about quarterly reports. I think you missed at the beginning, Anjali, but I said to the presenters who are here, don't repeat. You know, we don't want to spend time rehashing things that we've already been, you know, we've already read. So please bring ideas to that work plan discussion because, you know, we're only a year old on this commission, and the work plan, if we look at it every quarter, we want to have it be something that is going to, you know, work for the commission so that we can serve our purpose that we're supposed to in the ordinance. And how we best do that, you know, is up to us to figure out. Although I would say our job is different from the policy board's job. You know, we have a lot of things that get referred to us, and we have a lot of jobs on our work plan that we need to do every quarter in order to, you know, accomplish what we're supposed to in the ordinance. So, you know, we do have a different job than the policy board does. So do people feel that they have, go ahead, Jessica.
Could I just ask a question? Were there particular things, like, I'm just curious where the idea came from, or were there particular things that you were wanting to be able to bring up, or was it just more of like to get more people involved and more interest?
I wasn't at the formation of the agenda setting group, but it is inherent to the pulse to the TPPB in some sense that there are key policy issues that TPPB is trying to figure out how to prioritize on the agenda, along with city staff. So that happened there.
Yeah.
And I might have more to say.
Well, so I would say one of the primary drivers for TPPB going in that direction was the work of the Task Force on Government Structure that spent a year really digging into our board committee commission structures, sort of what works, what doesn't, and how to make all of our sort of subunits of government as effective as possible. And one broad theme was around having committees, boards, committees, commissions just be as effective as possible and work sort of as a group. And so we've already done a few things here in terms of like the onboarding kinds of materials, having a work plan. So those are some of the, even if not specific recommendations from TFOGS, are sort of these ideas that came out of there. And the kind of agenda setting process and trying to ensure that the agendas and what's discussed at the meetings are reflective of what the body wants to talk on is one of those keys. And so in ordinance, it's sort of defaulted to the chair in terms of their responsibility. And there's some practical reasons why that is, or why that sort of why that works. But it for TPPB, and again, I think partly because of the nature of that group, the chair and myself as vice chair really didn't want to make all of those decisions and sort of control that on behalf of the whole board, and really wanted to make sure that what we were spending time on at that body was what the entire board wanted to do. So that's sort of why we started that, and I think it has been good. It's sort of gotten us to prioritize, you know, what we're talking about at those meetings. All that being said, I think the commission is a different beast, and I think the hardest part is dealing with things that kind of come in late or come in as referrals. And so I think our agenda is always going to probably have more of those kinds of things than the policy board, where you kind of have to set your own agenda more. So the value of having, you know, that being a great substantive discussion for the TC agenda, you know, may not be the same. I think having it as an option, if, you know, if you're already meeting and just sort of letting, you know, if it didn't turn into a burden to do the notice thing of possible quorum, and if people were available to check in, I mean, it could provide some value. But the other thought I had was perhaps maybe we could even just expand the kind of item H on our agendas, where it says announcements and future agenda items. We could potentially try and just start putting sort of a draft of the upcoming agenda of.
We talked about that, and I just don't think it's feasible because of when the council
changes so much between.
We talked in the past week after the agenda setting meeting. It was like a couple times a day trying to deal with the stuff that happens in between. It's a great idea, and I understand where you're trying to go. And I have a list that I keep, but sometimes it's
maybe that's
and sometimes it's not.
I mean, I don't think it really requires a lot of input. You know, something gets referred to us by council. It's not really something we're going to talk a lot about. It's going to be on the agenda, right?
Right.
So I think it's probably more just if there are, we've had some different discussions in the past about different items, and so maybe just making sure all of the members of this body do take advantage of H, and so if there is something you want to see, just make sure and bring it out, and then potentially we could vote on things, say, like, yeah, we really want to see this, you know, at our next meeting or in the next month or something like that, just to help give more clarity about kind of relative priority. That would be maybe one way that we could sort of make sure that everybody's on board with what's on there.
And one of the other things that is an option is our work plan. We decided that our work plan is going to be more fluid. The original idea was to have an annual work plan and only approve it once a year. And we decided we would do it quarterly. So that's a way to change what's on the work plan. And one of the things that John told me, which I thought was interesting, and I think this may be from the TFLOX meetings, I'm not sure, was that I don't believe it's been a problem on this body, but some places the chair was refusing to put something on the agenda that other people wanted to have on the agenda. And I would certainly hope I, as chair, wouldn't ever want to do that. You know, if people bring something forward, you know, we want to talk about it, unless it's not within the purview of our commission. You know, we've had conversations about that. So, you know, that's a thought that never occurred to me, that somebody would do something like that. So I think, you know, having our work plan, which is something that we approve and something where we vote on it, is a powerful tool in terms of reflecting what the group wants. But we can certainly expand the discussion about future agenda topics. The downside is it's at the end of the meeting, everybody's tired, everybody wants to go home, so we get to that last thing on the agenda, right?
I'm going to raise that, I think, at TPPB also, which is that if we're going to use the meeting as a space to talk about the agenda, it probably can't be just like as everybody's getting ready to leave. Is there any thoughts on the agenda?
And that's a problem because, I mean, some of our meetings with public testimony get long and people are tired, and I get that. Harold?
Can I ask a question maybe related to that? So looking at the work plan, we have a lot of these quarterly reports from police, from Metro, from parking. Is there any, like, are we obligated to get those on a quarterly basis? Because I'm just asking, you know, the purpose of a meeting primarily should be if there's a decision to be made for us as a body.
Yeah.
And a lot of these reports, you know, I mean, sometimes I quite enjoy them, but they do take a lot of time, and they come every 3 months.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering if that maybe is one way to manage the workload of the commission that we really focus on. Like if there's a decision, like, you know, with Metro, if a route decision to be made, or, but yeah, like just having reports for reports' sake, I think is maybe not the best use of our time. So that might be one.
You're not the first person to bring that up, and I think that's certainly something we can talk about on our work plan. And I'd like everybody to think about that between now and then, because there's information that I think is important that we have in order to make decisions about, because we get budget amendments that come in, so it's important to know where parking is on their budget. If we get, you know, things that are brought to us with regard to parking change, parking fee changes or Metro budget changes. But that doesn't mean we have to spend time talking about them. So, you know, we can get reports and maybe not spend time talking about them. So those are all things that we can talk about on our work plan. Because, you know, we had a presentation last time, I'll just use parking as an example. You know, Sabrina went through the whole report and we all read that report. And so, is that how we want to spend our time? So I think that's very valuable discussion. Chris?
So maybe a missed opportunity then, and I haven't been to enough of the work, but when the work plan is on the agenda, right, we do like a work plan session once in a while in here?
We do at the beginning of every quarter, so it's on the agenda. That's suggesting that we do it at the next meeting.
Right.
There have been several suggestions from people, and Yang's working on an updated version to bring to us to look at for the next meeting.
So I was just going to say maybe the opportunity is to not only look at what we want on the future agenda, but to also look back at what we thought we would cover that we didn't and what we saw that we didn't think was worth our time.
Say that again, Chris.
We look back at the past agenda, at the past work plan and the past agendas, and see what maybe we were hoping to get to that we didn't.
Yeah.
And what we, some of these reports that we might have seen that we identify as not as useful to spend time on. And that could probably help a lot.
So I think, so I'll do that personally and look back through the past list. And I have a running list of things that have been on my own personal list that we haven't gotten to. And we have on our work plan things that we haven't gotten to. And I'd ask everybody else to do the same thing so we can have a, instead of having a perfunctory discussion about the work plan next time, that we really have a valuable discussion about, I mean, you made some suggestions last time, Ken, and Yang and I met and we talked about some of those things, and other folks have had discussion or suggestions. And I think that if we can do that, I view that as valuable, and I guess it's my preference that we not post the meetings and you know, put us through a process that limits the discussions that we have at our current meetings. But if everybody really wants to come to the agenda setting meetings, we can try it and do it. But why, you know, I only say that we do that if people really want to come and really want to add 22 more meetings to your calendar. So we have 22 meetings a year and 22 agenda setting meetings. So it's a, you know, it's a lot. I personally go to them all. It's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I just to say, so I personally generally have meetings every day for about a 12-hour period.
Yeah.
From 7:30 to 7:30, and I, there's just no more time left in the day for me to add a meeting.
Yeah, and these are usually in the afternoon. So they're during the workday. They're not in the evening. So what do people feel?
I think it's probably not necessary. I mean, not like I see your point, but it feels like the discussion we've had, we have opportunities within our existing agenda and within our work plan that we can cover the things that we need, and I would think it's not necessary.
Other folks? Anjali?
My sense is that the intention behind the agenda setting meetings was around prioritizing and efficiency, and so that may not be the vehicle to get to those things, but I would still be interested in trying to figure out how do we, whether it's limiting information if we're not making a decision. I think sometimes, in my observation of this group, sometimes there's discussion that's not actually relevant to the decision at hand. I don't know what the group process would be in order to move to being more focused, but I would be interested in being able to pursue those things.
Well, why don't we, one of the things, I'm a big believer in ground rules for meetings myself. I'll give you my personal pet peeve in my work life. I'm retired now. People who would come to meetings late. And sometimes it would be the manager of the department would come late. And then people would feel compelled to go over the same stuff that we already covered to bring that person up to speed, wasting everybody's time because that person was late. So we set a ground rule and said if somebody comes late to a meeting, we're not going to stop and go back over anything that we've already covered. If you're late for whatever reason, sometimes there's really good reasons why people can't be there at the time the meeting starts, we're just not going to do that. So we could, within the bounds of what the ordinances say and what our handbook says, you know, we can, as a group, agree that we're going to try and be focused. I'm a participative person, so if somebody starts talking about something, I'm likely going to let you talk about it, unless it's, you know, not on our agenda and not something we can talk about. But if we as a group want to stay more focused, I guess I would view that as work plan type discussion in order to keep our meetings as efficient as we can. So, you know, maybe we talk about that at our work plan.
Or maybe one other suggestion would just be, it seems like I've observed, I think your observation is fair, and maybe some of it is just within each item, just clarifying at the beginning, we are here today to do this or that. Like, even the traffic signal priority list is maybe an example where we get a presentation, which sometimes leads to discussion, which is great, but maybe just starting with the reminder of here's our goal with this item, and here's the end game that we're trying to get to. And maybe starting with framing it that way will help us to keep on task too as we hear a presentation.
And I think that's also a fair comment in terms of how we put things on the agenda. But it's all, you know, it's kind of a tricky thing, because if we put it on the agenda too specific, that's really all we can talk about. And so we try and be careful about that. But, you know, with the State Street speed humps, you know, how we put it on the agenda was critically important. So that's a great observation as well. And there was a comment, well, what are we supposed to do with the traffic signal priority list? You know, but there is a, you know, in our work plan, Yang put in there, you know, this is the first time it's here, and so this is what we're accomplishing there. So that further descriptions on the work plan. So maybe I can work with Yang so that whether it's on the agenda or not, we can make sure that it's clear what we're trying to accomplish with each agenda item.
Yeah, I would just say that's one of the successes that came out of the agenda setting meetings is that all the items were given sort of expected time spent on each item and an idea of what the purpose of bringing that item, maybe not on the agenda itself, but as the chair, you could say this is why this item is in front of us and sort of set some boundaries on we should be talking about this for 15 minutes.
I think it would be quite challenging to figure out how much time we try and estimate how much time we think it's going to take. But so far, I don't think we've ever been right, have we? Have we ever been right? Not too often, I don't think. We do try that.
I'm pretty sure we've been publishing the time.
Yeah, I was just going to check. You are publishing them, and I'm not in favor of that myself. But
I love it. I think it is great, and it doesn't really matter if we put 15, it turns into 40, but it is a good marker to communicate what the intent is. And I think it certainly, I've seen it already help, where if you see something on there that says 5 minutes, that's really grounding to understand, okay, I get that. And it does, I think, help prevent things from turning into really long conversations. Or if you put 45 minutes, I think there's an expectation that this is something we're going to kind of sit with. It's a, you know, it is more of a discussion kind of thing. So we have to sort of hold ourselves to it or something happens if we miss it, but more of just a way of marking what the intent is, again, sort of in that vein. The other thing that we're still working on is to actually have almost like a little intake form for presenters, because it's one thing if the board or the commission sort of knows what we're trying to accomplish, but then you can have, and you know, you did a good job today, I think, of saying, hey, remember, take for granted that we've all read it and just go ahead with, you know, that. Making a presenter who says, oh, I want to come to you and present on University Avenue and saying, okay, well, what are you looking for from the commission with that presentation? And actually sort of forcing them to think about it also is sort of the next step that we're working on with TPPB. So we can also share, you know, whatever we come up with in terms of that little form, or, you know, it's like 3 questions or something that we just want to make sure we all have answered, both the, you know, the chair or whoever's setting the agenda, but also the presenter. So everybody's on the same page about what the goals are.
And oftentimes they go right to Patrick. So I just hear from Patrick. So if you can, you know, ask them what they expect from us, I think that's very helpful. And if I can just say before I go to you, I think that it would be good for us to put the time limit on. And if we do want to see the quarterly reports for the information but not spend any time on it, if we put 5 minutes on the agenda, that's all we're going to spend on it, or 2 minutes or whatever we would put, that would be a clear message to whoever is coming with whatever report it is that we really only want a very short, abbreviated presentation. So we could try it for the next meeting, and then also discuss that as part of the work plan as well, perhaps.
Yeah. We did a one.
And Jessica also had a thing too. Go ahead.
We had a report that was on like alternative fuels for Metro that we wanted to just basically distribute to TPPB members, but not, like, it was pretty self-explanatory, and we didn't want to even talk about it for 2 minutes in case it turned into 10. So we included it on the agenda. We put it in Legistar, but I forgot what we called it, but, like, information only or something. And we didn't even So it was on the agenda. It was in Legistar. We asked people to read it, but we didn't. It wasn't something that we actually even talked about. And the reason I think that just to consider that is in terms of staff effort for these meetings also is the other thing that came up in TFOGS. And so I would hate to have staff come and have to sort of sit, for, even if it's in the beginning of the agenda, but just to come just to make sure there's not a question. I mean, it's at least an hour's, you know, worth of time that they're wasting, you know, wasting. So that, I think, is a consideration. And even the reports themselves, I think maybe when we talk more about the work plan, I'd like to just even, I mean, if we're not going to take them up, then I'd like to ask ourselves the question, are they already doing these reports? And then, great, we can get them. But I also would hate to, you know, if they're putting a fair amount of time into creating these quarterly reports, and we're not going to be taking them up and we don't really want to take them up, I also don't want to ask them to keep doing these things if they're not providing a lot of value. Yeah. So I think that's maybe just something we can talk about,
yeah,
you know, on those quarterly reports in particular.
Yeah, and those are great comments, and Jessica, I'll get to you. But there's a section on our agenda at the bottom where we get the minutes from other groups where they're in Legistar. You can go look at them, but we don't talk about them. So I guess I'll have to consider, because if we do, and I see value in the reports, we can talk about that in the work plan. If we want to get the reports, but we want it to be a questions-only type situation where there's not even a presentation, you know how we put that on the agenda. So a lot of good thoughts that we can have, and Metro has their quarterly report on our agenda for next time. So maybe we'll just put that on there as, you know, questions only or something like that. So no presentation. The information is there, and we only talk about it if we as a group see something that we want to talk about. So these are all great ideas for how we can be more efficient and effective, you know, and get at some of the things that we've said that we want to get to. So, Bridget.
It would be nice to maybe explore the idea of if there are informational items where no action is needed. And Grant, I don't know if this is what you're talking about, but doing that as consent agenda. So.
Yeah, the Plan Commission has a consent agenda, and the Council has a consent agenda.
Like two of those items tonight we could have probably had on a consent agenda, the Metro-related ones, for example.
Yeah, I have to figure out the logistics of that. That's a great suggestion, too. So is it fair to say that that we just leave the agenda-setting meetings as they are for now and maybe consider changing it in the future if some of the things that we talk about with the work plan doesn't help achieve the things that people want to achieve?
Yeah, I think it's good to have this discussion, though, hopefully, for folks.
And Patrick, we've talked about the order of the agenda. Normally we put action items first, and we try and we schedule a time for a public hearing so people know when they have to be there. You know, can we move future agenda items up on the agenda so that it's talked about earlier so that people are fresh and we're thinking about it first? So just something for us to work on? Because it's a fact. When we get to almost 8 o'clock at night, people are like, I got to go. Yeah. Right. I get it. I understand that.
Maybe along those lines, thinking about for the public who want to provide input, like putting
right.
that in the front end of the agenda, even though sometimes it's actually more difficult for people to be here right at 5 rather than at 6, but maybe not at 9.
Regardless of the order on the agenda, just anything that has people that have comment and or if they're staff, I mean, we can always just take things up out of order to try and minimize who's waiting around. I think sometimes you just take it as it presents itself.
Yeah. Okay, great discussion. And this is exactly, you know, we sort of borderline talked about the work plan, but I think these are all things that we can talk about with regard to the work plan and hopefully to make us more efficient in the future. So, I appreciate all of the feedback and certainly am and open to change and we'll try and do the estimated time frame for each item, on our next agenda and give some thought as to what we can do with regard to some of these things. So, great topic. And it may not have been the direction you were planning to go, Chris, but it was a really good discussion.
I had no plan.
Okay. All right, crossover report. Policy board? Grant?
That probably suffices as our crossover point, discussion. But we did recommend that WISTA hold off on the Beltline shoulder expansion until further study, but it went through the MPO board.
What did you decide about meeting? You said you were going to look at meeting twice a month versus once a month.
Yes.
You are going to go twice a month?
Yeah, we had really long agendas, and we're trying to figure out how to actually get stuff done. So.
Okay, I was just curious.
And then the other thing we did was started the conversation around scoping for our complete streets. So that was an amendment that passed, and so we've got, I think it's $160,000. So starting to kind of framing for an RFP for what we might be able to get out of that study.
Mm-hmm.
And downtown BRT routing, small update again.
Yeah.
Work in progress.
There are more alternatives on BRT being thrown into the mix.
Yeah. A question I had on BRT, and I don't know if this is something you talked about. I saw it, the mayor was on some show, and she was talking about the BRT route, but also that there was a study being done on how, on the impact on the other routes, not connected to the BRT, and that certainly is within the purview of this group because we have to approve those route changes. So that's something we'll talk to the Metro folks about so that we can understand what's going on with that.
Maybe just to clarify, so that is, there was a $1 million study that's basically knowing that we are working on bringing BRT in East-West Corridor. I think the concept is to have a complete system analysis done that could result in completely different route network than we have today. So that would, so that's, I think, what she was getting at with that. And
yeah.
So the, that was fully funded for 2020. So we will begin that work likely with a consultant sometime next year.
Okay.
But it's a very, very significant effort that is sort of a comprehensive review.
Sure, which obviously impacts what we do here too.
One quick thing I wanted to just mention before we adjourn.
We still have to talk about future agenda items.
Okay. All right.
And announcements too. I have to do those too.
Okay, I'll wait.
You sure?
I can wait until, are we on?
Yeah, let me just do the announcements. I just, I'm obligated to remind you. Oh, so first of all, obviously we're having a meeting on January 8th. At our agenda setting meeting, we thought we didn't need one. It became clear that we do need one, so we are going to have one. And also, I'm obligated to remind you all, statement of interest forms need to be filed. You got an email from the city clerk. There's one person who got booted off of our group because that person didn't file a statement of interest form. So, yeah, you don't file it within a certain time period, you can get booted by the council. That's not the word, appropriate word for it, but you get my drift.
Although, since we were booting.
Sorry, that wasn't the most professional way to describe it, but it's very important that you fill that out. And then future agenda items, and then I'll open it up, Bridget, for other folks' comments. We have Metro's quarterly report, which was delayed because they're still doing that, having issues with that data issue. More 2020 projects review. Potentially rate changes for parking, not sure about that. The crash report and crash report analysis, the quarterly review of the work plan, University Avenue, which was deferred as well, and other topics from, oh, and I did have a topic on my list, and I beg your pardon, I can't remember who mentioned this at one of our meetings, but it was suggested as a future agenda topic, was how the Transportation Commission can be proactive in getting safety issues brought to traffic engineering's attention. So I don't know if that's something we want to talk about as an agenda item next time, or if that's something that we want to talk about in relationship to how can we do that in our work plan. Because I'm happy to add it onto the agenda, because I think that's then maybe the next step of, you know, we made some changes on the quarterly traffic safety report, which were great and helpful information, and I think the next step to that is what do we do with that information, which is kind of this agenda topic. So I'm happy to add that if we'd like to at least start the discussion at the next meeting. So did I frame that well enough from whoever suggested that? How the Transportation Commission can be proactive in getting safety issues brought to traffic engineering's attention?
Must be someone.
Ken, did you bring that up? I can't remember now who brought it up. Bill?
Whoever brought it up contacts you and clarifies what it was, and then.
Well, that's why I wrote it down, and Patrick, you had the same thing written down, didn't you?
Suppose we can look through all the videos and find out.
If we forgot, yeah. We don't think it's important, yeah. Then we can leave it off.
Well, I think maybe it's something we can talk about with regard to our quarterly traffic. Why don't we talk about it with regard to the work plan and not leave it as an agenda? Okay. Bridget, do you have something?
Yeah, just quick, I thought you guys might be interested to know. The bike-friendly states rankings came out, and we have gone from number 2 to number 29.
What?
And bike deaths are up 200% this year in Wisconsin.
You went from 2 to 29?
200%. Is it because of the snow? No. What was that? Just like over across the board? Wow.
Is that published somewhere?
Which?
The bike fatality.
The LED rankings?
No, not the rankings.
Oh, okay.
The crash.
Oh, the crash date? Yeah, you can get it on the, what is it called? The
bars?
Yeah, it's from the top slab.
Community maps.
Yeah, the community maps from the top.
So it's not like a report about the...
Well, you can... No, there's no report, but you can see where every single one happened, yeah, and what the circumstances are.
Is that something that people are interested in? Can you send a link?
One of those things.
Get it to Patrick and then send
sure.
a link out to people?
Sure.
Are people interested in that? Because Patrick can just distribute a link.
I mean,
no?
Statewide, so I mean...
Yeah.
Okay.
Agenda item, review a link.
So
okay.
On the positive side, though, so the city of Madison and also UW-Madison and some of surrounding municipalities has done really well in the recent application to be bike-friendly cities or communities. So Madison, received a platinum status again. Yeah, there's only 5 cities in the country as a status, so Madison is one of them. And actually, UW-Madison received a platinum status as well for a campus area. So you know, other communities received different levels of recognition as well. So that's a positive. I guess that's a positive thing in the area.
Sad news, though. Anything else for future agenda topics? Okay. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Motion?
Second.
Second? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, great discussion. Thanks, everybody.